Blog Talk Radio.
We knock them when they fail and they are down. We sometimes overlook them when they are up. But Saturday night's victory by the Miami Hurricanes over Clemson had worthy shout-outs all over the place. Elite achievement that we value tonight and salute on this new edition of Canesport Live. The head coach, the only person who thought it was the right decision to sit on the ball in the final 1 minute and 30 seconds of the game in regulation rather than trying to score, was Mario Cristobal himself. Unlike in the Georgia Tech game where Cristobal got burnt by his late decision not to take a knee, this time Cristobal was rewarded by Miami's victory in overtime. The two coordinators, defensive coordinator Lance Guidry, who got caught at North Carolina when his defense was not properly prepared for the hurry-up offense that North Carolina rolled out. But Saturday night, the defense was prepared for everything. Clemson even briefly tested the same up-tempo offense that North Carolina employed for a few plays and then simply abandoned it because Miami was ready for it this time. The Canes even had a blitz call ready on one of them. It was clearly something that justifiably had gotten a lot of attention in game preparations during the week. And this week, Lance Guidry's star was simply shining brightly. Offensive coordinator Shannon Dawson. Everybody just watches games, but nobody really gets a glimpse of the behind-the-scenes aspect of an extremely competitive game like Miami against Clemson was. Dawson was going to battle with a true freshman quarterback, being asked to handle everything against one of the best defenses in the country. Maybe he was a little too conservative, as everybody thought watching the game, but you know what? It worked. And Emery Williams survived, and Miami won the game in overtime. The players, Emery Williams himself, how often do you see a true freshman quarterback thrust into a situation like that against one of the best defenses in the country and come out of it so magnificently? Williams made every play when he had to with the game on the line, and he got invaluable experience that will undoubtedly serve him well as he moves forward in his Miami career. A.J. Allen and Don Chaney. Taking a physical pounding is never fun, but these two guys sacrificed their bodies all night in the inside run game, and they were incredibly effective, even if the numbers didn't shout that out. Chaney had 63 yards in 17 tough inside runs. A.J. Allen had 54 yards on 16 carries. Didn't it seem like both of those guys had so much more? Both struggled to make guys miss after contact, but the toughness in the run game was undeniable and the difference between winning and losing on Saturday night. How about Rashard Smith? He's had a hard time crafting a role for himself as a college football player the last few years, mostly because of his size and his inconsistency. Now, he's made a few big plays this season, and his teammates are comparing him to the Miami Dolphins' Tyreek Hill. How's that for a change of fortune? And then there's Jacoby George. How can we not give Jacoby George a shout-out after the hustle that he showed in trailing Rashard Smith on that 80-yard run where Smith got stripped of the ball inside the 5-yard line? And he got lucky that George was there because of his hustle to recover it for the touchdown. Corey Flagg. Everybody's been trying to run him out of town for a couple years, looking for somebody better to play the linebacker position for Miami. And there he was, making the big play on fourth down on the final play to secure the win in overtime over Clemson. Corey Flagg has been an immovable object at linebacker for Miami. Leonard Taylor. Where's Leonard Taylor been all year? We've been saying it over and over again. Well, given the opportunity to play more of a nose tackle role on Saturday night, Taylor dominated the Clemson offensive line inside and finally showed the kind of effort that he is capable of when he actually wants to play hard. And then there's the true freshman that plays hard every single play. All Leonard Taylor has to do is look a little bit over to his right, and he can see Reuben Bain, who is playing as a true freshman about as well as any defensive lineman in America. He was unbelievable the other night against Clemson. So you can go on and on and on. I mean, we can give a shout-out to Jaden Davis. It's no secret right now or by now that he struggles in pass coverage, but Jaden Davis fights. Clemson came out targeting him repeatedly Saturday night. He got a few breaks when he probably committed pass interference, but he didn't buckle under that spotlight. Davis has been a quality pickup in the portal, even though he does get beat at times in the passing game. Darryl Porter, he struggled in 2022. Everybody was ready to replace him also. His future in the program was certainly in question at that point. But Porter put an incredible amount of work in the offseason, came back with a strong spring practice, has carried it over to the fall, and is a markedly better player this year, rock solid on the outside. The offensive line, dominant all night. Colby Young making big catch after big catch. None bigger than that third down over the middle in the fourth quarter, one play after he dropped a pass. Dylan Joyce, the new punter, looking every bit as effective as Lou Headley in his first year. How about Andres Borgalis, the kicker, who's Mr. Automatic this season? Even Tyler Van Dyke, sitting out the game with an injury, who had to be extremely disappointed to not be able to play against Clemson for the second year in a row. But he was there, a rock of support for Emory Williams every step of the way throughout that game, mentoring the kid through the night and keeping him calm amid the storm. Kudos to TVD for the assist and being such a rock-solid teammate. So tonight, as we embark on a new edition of Cane Sport Live, we salute a team full of heroes. Hello again, everybody. I'm Gary Furman, the publisher of canesport.com. We welcome you once again, finally, to Canesport Live. Unbelievable that we had a technical issue with the system again. We apologize for that and the show having to start 30 minutes late, but we are here. And as always, this is your show, and it's driven by your participation. The call-in number is 563-999-3550. 563-999-3550. You hit the number 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. We have over 100 open phone lines, plenty of room for everybody to call in and participate. If you're riding around and you want to listen over the phone, you can do that as well. This year, I'll once again be joined by Cane Sports' Azubi Charles as we take your calls and discuss the various issues surrounding Miami Hurricanes and recruiting. All right, so there's no question about the importance of Saturday's victory over Clemson. But now the key is going to be, what does Miami do from here? Okay, you got to take care of business this weekend against Virginia. You saw North Carolina wasn't able to do that last weekend after beating Miami. They had a letdown, and they lost to the Cavaliers, who began their season with 5 straight losses, but now have won 2 in a row. Then next week, if they get past Virginia, okay, they got to go on the road and take care of business against NC State. That would leave the Canes at 7-2, knowing that they should be 8-1 as they travel to Tallahassee to face what is looking like it's going to be an undefeated FSU team, the game of the season. That is what you wish for right now. All right, let me bring in Azubi. And Azubi, you know, I'm curious to know what your thoughts were about what we saw on Saturday night against Clemson. And how do you feel about the Canes taking care of business these next 2 weeks and going into FSU with a boatload of momentum?
Hey, Gary.
There you go, Azubi. Sorry about that.
No worries. Yeah, no. So, you know, as I was saying to myself, I was probably as stressed and worried during that game as anybody else, you know, in the stadium or watching at home, just kind of thinking to myself, you know, how is Miami going to pull out this one before the game when we saw Tyler Van Dyke, you know, walking through the cane walk. We saw him visibly limping, and we just knew he wasn't going to play. But so at the end of the day, Miami pulled through, and, you know, a game like that is one that you really, really need after, you know, what we saw at Georgia Tech, after what we saw with North Carolina. And, you know, a lot of credit has been given out, a lot of flowers have been given out, but just my biggest thing was that offensive line, man, played their hearts out. And, you know, everyone in the, you know, in the stadium watching at home knew they were going to run the ball, and they still were able to push around one of the best defenses in the country, like no tomorrow, create holes for these running backs and running back room that's a little bit beaten up and everything like that. But, you know, with Virginia Tech and NC State coming up, I just got to think, you know, you can't let your highs get too high and you can't let the lows get too low. And, you know, like you mentioned, Virginia is a team that, you know, almost no one probably picked to upset North Carolina, and they go into North Carolina and beat them, something that Miami couldn't do. So that just tells you any given day you can lose to a team that, you know, you don't expect to beat you and things like that. So hopefully Miami can keep a level head. Do not look ahead at that big Florida State game, as easy it is to do so, and just, you know, game by game, just come out with that same mindset, play with that chip on their shoulders that we saw they played against Clemson. And, you know, I think that'll lead up to another top 25 matchup when they go up to Tallahassee with a team that's, you know, probably going to be undefeated, you know, come that time.
Yeah, it's funny. Lance Guidry said this week that he was so happy to see Virginia beat North Carolina because now he doesn't have to worry about his guys overlooking Virginia. And, you know, you think, man, 12 regular season games, like how does anybody overlook anybody? But you see it happen every single week. You know, I mean, I guess, you know, these are kids, they're distracted, they got a lot going on, they go into class, they got girlfriends, and I guess it's maybe just natural that some of these guys just don't take every game as seriously and intensely as, you know, the big ones. And we've seen that with Miami this year. I mean, Canes could not have looked much better as they did against Texas A&M and Clemson, but against, you know, Georgia Tech and North Carolina didn't play as well. You know, for whatever reason. So nice to see. It would be nice to see them show up and take care of business in a resounding fashion against Virginia. Now, Zuby, the other thing you mentioned was Tyler Van Dyke showing up at the stadium, and we were out there at Canes Walk, and we were all watching TVD to see how he was walking. And I'll tell you, compared to the way he was walking Monday, he was walking, I know he still had a little bit of a limp, but he was walking a lot better. And I was wondering whether they were going to try to play him in that game. But he met with Mario Cristobal. They decided that he was not ready to go and put Emery out there. And the kid came through big time, man. And it was exciting to watch. And I know everybody probably had some anxious moments that were at the stadium or watching on TV. But that was a big night for Miami football. You know, they didn't win the game as big a margin as maybe they would have if they had been able to run a normal offense the whole night. I mean, it's hard to say how it would have played out. They also could have had turnovers and stuff also. And yeah, they were very conservative at times throughout that game, trying to nurse Emery Williams through it. But when they asked him to increase his degree of difficulty in the second half, he came through pretty much on every play. So, you know, in hindsight, you're saying, hey, well, maybe he could have handled a little bit more in the second quarter. You know, maybe they could have been a little bit more wide open. Maybe they could have even gone for the win in regulation. But they gambled on overtime. This time Mario won. I would not have wanted to be here tonight if they had not won. I think that obviously a lot of people already angry about the Georgia Tech game would have gone after Mario a little bit for not being more aggressive at the end of regulation. But when you win and it works and your strategy works, you come out smelling like a rose, and that's the life of a head coach. All right, the call-in number again is 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you would like to come on the show. We're starting out tonight in the 865. You are live on Canes Sport Live.
Gary, my friend, how are you doing, sir?
Doing good. Who's this?
This is James from Tennessee, bud.
What's up, James? How you doing tonight?
Oh, Oh, doing good. But I tried to holler at you at the North Carolina game at the end, but I think there was just too much noise, even though most of the stadium was gone by then when you were walking out of the field.
Oh, shit, I would have loved
to introduce myself. But
would have loved to meet you,
man. I try to make a trek, you know, being in Knoxville and stuck in Vol country, that when they're up this way, I try to catch a game and everything. And it was a shame that we couldn't pull it off last week. But
You coming to NC State next week?
You know what? I couldn't, unfortunately. I had another situation. I have a wedding to go to, so that's what would have been. I would have gone to both if it hadn't been for this wedding that I'm going to for a friend there in Athens, Tennessee. So, unfortunately, I'll be missing that one. I'm hoping I'll get to catch the game because the wedding's at 4, so I'm going to try to get back and watch at 8 o'clock, though. So, because I guess they announced it's at 8 o'clock on the ACC Network, if I'm not mistaken, next week.
Yep.
So, yeah. But, yeah.
Late in Raleigh.
Yeah. So I would have loved to have met you, but next time definitely I'll try to holler at you and so forth. But just a couple of things I wanted to ask you, Gary. In your opinion, do you think and the obvious answer is look who we've lost to so far. You know, Georgia Tech and North Carolina. But to be fair, we've lost to those two teams ever since we've joined this conference. You know, either both in the same year, one or the other. I guess my question is. Does this help Miami in terms of the fact that they're not in like the coastal and the Atlantic, so to speak? You know, because obviously with two divisional losses, you're out. But there is still a scenario that if Miami somehow pulls this off and Carolina loses a couple of more games, and it's very well possible after they lost last week to Virginia, anybody can beat anybody. Does this help Miami going forward in like other years as well, that there are no clear-cut divisions at this point?
I don't think anything helps Miami unless they win the next two games and beat Florida State. If those things don't happen, everything else is irrelevant, in all honesty. So, you know, nobody knows what's going to happen with North Carolina at this point. All Miami can do is win these next couple games and give themselves an opportunity to beat the Seminoles. And then we'll see. You know, it's like it's not even worth speculating about, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. No, you got to take it one game at a time. And, you know, that's the other thing, too. It's kind of funny. I saw some mirrors of the Georgia Tech game and the Clemson game, only the roles were reversed for Miami. You know, Georgia Tech played a very conservative game and let Miami make the mistakes and pounced on them, and without going into that nightmare again, but they attacked when they needed to. And Miami kind of did the exact same thing. Now, I know a lot of fans have criticized Coach about, you know, why did you leave it out there for a minute 36 and so forth, but if that kid throws an interception and they get down there and score a field goal, then it's the other thing that's talked about. There's so many different scenarios and so forth of that nature that, you know, just be happy with the win. Don't think about the what ifs. We've seen the what ifs, and to get a win is the most important thing. So I can understand where Mario's coming from in that regard. But at the same time, you know, if we had lost, yeah, it would have been a nightmare tonight with everybody calling in wanting heads, and it would have been Saturday night and on the message boards too.
What would you have said, James, if they lost?
Well, you know what? If they had lost, me personally, I said that they were going to probably lose just because you'd said it so many times in the morning that it was 12 of 17 years that they'd lost three in a row. So, despite the coaching staff, it was going to happen. If they had lost, I would have been like, well, my expectations were they were going to lose this game. But to battle back like they did, and then lose, that would have made me just as upset as probably everybody else. But
well, would you have gone after Mario Cristobal? Would you have gone after Mario Cristobal for not being aggressive at the end of the regulation?
Let me ask you this. Is this a fair question to say, is it Mario's call at that point, or is it the offensive coordinator Dawson?
100% is the head coach's call at that point. 100%.
Then I would have to go after Mario then. So yeah. Whoever makes that decision, you have to go after them.
Yeah. I mean, they're talking to each other on the headsets, but that kind of decision is 100% on the head coach. No question about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And he's thinking, okay, these guys, we have all the momentum. We're beating the crap out of them at the line of scrimmage. They have very extensive blitz packages. What happens if they know we're throwing every down and they break free and they get a strip sack, or Emery rushes a throw and gets intercepted and it gets returned.
Yeah.
He's thinking about all the bad things that can happen, and that's why he made the decision he made. Normally, head coaches can't sit there and think about bad things happening. You know, that was a rare instance where you had a freshman quarterback on the field playing against one of the top defenses in the country, and he had to make a calculated gamble. And let me tell you something, it was a gusty one because, like we said, if it doesn't work out, you know, on the heels of Georgia Tech, oh, my God. And maybe it would have been unfair, probably would have been unfair, but he would be taking so much heat for that decision had it not worked out. But it did work out this time for him, and I was very happy for him that it did, because I know it's been a rough time for Mario to have to accept the fact that he made that mistake against Georgia Tech and the ramifications of it. So it was good for him that this one worked out.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And it's like you said, Gary, and you know, I don't think you get enough credit for you have been right about so many things over the years, regardless of who the coach was, of where the team's at, where the team needs to be. And I don't think enough people give you credit. I think that you get criticized because you're just telling truths that need to be really said. And you know, for example, after the Temple game, you mentioned to Corey Couch jumping a route. What does he do? He makes a boneheaded play 2 weeks later against Georgia Tech. If he just tackles that guy in bounds, they have no timeouts and they run out the clock, regardless if there was a fumble or anything like that. But he jumps the route, the guy gets behind him and gets down the field even closer to scoring, you know. So you've pointed out things that, you know, oh, well, we won. But the thing is, in the heat of the moment, the players have to play smarter. And I wanted to get on the show after that Georgia Tech game to bring that up, but I couldn't unfortunately that night. But I did.
Hey, how about a North Carolina James where Keontra Smith, the same guy that ran on the field on that play and did a 15-yard penalty, draws another one when the defense is off the field. He draws another undisciplined penalty, bumping into a guy as he's setting up to be on the punt team.
Yeah. Oh, I saw it live. I couldn't believe it. I mean, it's buffoonery. It's buffoonery. And you know, and what I was going to ask you, do you think at times Mario, when he stresses, you know, the fact that, you know, we still need more recruits and things like that, I don't think it's just the physical part of what looks like the team or whatever, but it's like the smart and the X's and O's in the heat of the moment. I'm all for the lore of the past and everything like that, but you've not done anything in 20 years to be that, you know, and you're not good enough to overcome 200-yard penalties in the Cotton Bowl or anything like that. And that's where what is so frustrating that should be to all the fans. And I'm almost wondering that he's trying to recruit, you know, obviously a smart player that is mentally tough, but also doesn't in the heat of the moment, you know, get baited or do stupid stuff that, you know, you're not good enough to overcome those mistakes. And you certainly don't have the depth at certain positions to warrant three more plays that somebody else could get hurt. If you can get off the field, you need to get off the field. And so to see a huge improvement from last week to this week, I mean, you got to give kudos. And you did mention that Dawson was on the clock this week of a test, you know, talking about Clemson, because Guidry unfortunately failed his against North Carolina's offense, especially in that second half when they were going very fast. But to talk about, you know, with Dawson, with what he had to work with, and I think Mario had mentioned after the game that was a very tough game for him to call because he did want to air it out, but he had to be conservative for the game plan. I think that shows a good coordinator that you adapted to the situation and still found a way to win using the offense.
No doubt, man. Hey, this guy's an air raid disciple, okay? He comes from the Mike Leach tree, and, you know, they throw the ball every down in that family. And he's learning the power run game. You know, Mario brings the power run concepts that he's developed through his career. He's got the Alabama running game, obviously, in his back pocket, and believes wholeheartedly that you must be able to do that. When you need, like, and the Clemson game was a perfect example. They had to be able to physically pound the football, and because of the way they train it and the way they recruit at that position up front on the offensive line, you know, they were able to get it done at a time where they had the true freshman quarterbacks. 211 rushing yards. Clemson had 31. I mean, that is unbelievable domination of the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. And that's why they were able to win with so much stacked against them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And credit to Reuben Bain. I mean, you've talked about it in the morning shows. I mean, that kid was just an absolute animal. And I think that we have had some fool's gold in the years past with guys like Marcus Fortson and Leonard Taylor and Nesta Silvera. And, you know, Leonard did step up this last week, finally. But can you bring it for the rest of the season? Because, you know,
please,
you've been missing in action prior to it, you know? I mean, you really think that you're a first-round pick? If I was a GM, I wouldn't waste even any pick. I would even maybe even give him a call to show up for a training camp or whatever for a restricted free agent spot with how you take plays off. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm just being real. But this kid comes in as a freshman, and he just is an absolute bull. And we just need to enjoy him for the time he's here because he could just keep getting better and better, and he wants it. And that's the thing that it is. You can show who wants it and who doesn't. And the other thing that I was going to ask you, Gary, because I think you mentioned about Kevin Riley, and you know, I hope that I mean, obviously things can always change, but do you think that he's all in as a Cane? Because that kid is special when you watch his tape. Honestly,
it looks that way, right, Azubi? Wouldn't you agree that Kevin Riley looks rock solid? In fact, he's got one of his, I guess, friends who's a 2025 running back coming down for this weekend's game.
Yeah, no. So Kevin Riley, after, you know, the other game against Clemson, spoke with us a little bit. And, you know, obviously in this day and age, the commitment's kind of, you know, very washed when kids say that. But he was adamant saying, you know, he's locked in with Miami. There's not been anything he's seen or, you know, been told that has kind of, you know, shied him away from his commitment. And, you know, one thing that I always, you know, always like to bring up with this Kevin Riley recruitment is, you know, when Kevin Riley had zero stars, he was unranked, you know, not many people, you know, in the country knew about him. Miami was one of the first teams to offer him and have been persistent on him ever since. And it kind of, you know, paid dividends with him committing to Miami over Alabama, who's right in his backyard, Auburn, who's still, you know, very much recruiting him to the most of their ability. And, you know, Miami's always been that team for him. And, you know, he's been down multiple times. I believe that was his second game day visit this year, and every time he's saying the same things, you know, there's nothing that's shining away from Miami. And he mentioned, you know, him bringing Alvin Henderson, who's a 2025 running back, down to Miami as well. So Kevin Riley's locked in with Miami. He's recruiting, you know, his friends to come to Miami as well, which is awesome to see. So right now I like where Miami stands with Kevin Riley, and I don't see that changing anytime soon unless something drastic happens.
Well, that's music to my ears because – Yeah, I'll just finish with this. That's music to my ears because I would love to see this offense with healthy running backs, and it shows that realistically, you know, you're down right now. You've mentioned it before, Parrish, Jay Allen, and so forth, nice backs, but I don't think they're what Mario's looking for. And hopefully maybe Citizen gets a chance to show what he was before that injury because he was special as well, and Fletcher can get back out of that boot because if those guys were running the ball healthy, I would love to actually say that this team is 8-0. But looking for a big one this Saturday. Keep it going, and thank you for all you do, Gary. Love you, man. Go Canes.
All right, James. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Azubi, I hope they don't play Citizen this year. I really do. Let them just keep progressing. Let them go through spring practice and fall practice next year and come into next season full go, 100%, totally confident. I don't see the need to put him out there this year. I think Fletcher will be back. You know, Fletcher should be back hopefully pretty soon. And I don't see any reason to throw Citizen out there.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. And, you know, that just reminds me of the Zion Nelson situation. You know, last year we see him play a little bit in that Texas A&M game, and I don't think he makes it through the whole game. And, you know, we haven't seen him since coming off a knee injury, and we haven't really had updates on him, you know, since. So I feel like you get, you know, Citizen back healthy this year and you hold him out because, honestly, do you really need him is the question, and I don't think they do this year.
I hope they don't.
Parrish is going to come back. We've seen Breshard Smith can be used in that backfield as well. So, you know, I feel like you hold Citizen as much as he might want to play. I feel like this is kind of a mental battle more than a physical battle. Make sure he's, you know, 110%, you know, healthy instead of 100%, and just unleash him next year.
Yeah, I agree. All right, 563-999-3550 is the number, 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. Let's go out now to the 352. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Gary.
Yes, sir.
It's your co-host.
Remind me, what's your name? What's your name again?
You're forgetting your co-host's name?
I forgot your name, sorry.
Sebastian Pipe. Come on, man.
All right, man. What's up, Sebastian? What you got for us, man?
That was a long phone call. I'm not going to lie. It was a long one. Listen, we saw a lot of great individual efforts. I agree. I think you're being a little hyperbolic, though, on everything that's going on right now. You're still seeing the same boneheaded coaching decisions week in and week out. I don't think that we're hitting on that enough. Like, Mario is still making dumb decisions. If we were calling it to go into overtime, right, why is he running the frickin' ball? Kneel it. Like, he literally...
I'm guessing he was thinking, let's see if we can bust the run.
Oh, come on. Hey,
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. You're not, you know, you're probably not totally wrong, but I'm guessing that, you know, you remember they busted the 80-yarder. The O-line was dominant. Clemson at that point is thinking pass. And maybe they felt like, let's see if we can bust the run.
No, it was a freaking draw, man. It was a dive up the middle, you know? It's like
– I understand.
It's just stupid.
You know, they were executing the play, hoping to bust it, I imagine.
I think you're giving them too much credit for being cerebral. I think if you go back one more week to North Carolina, you can blame Guidry all you want. But whose job is it to ask Guidry, hey, what are we going to do if they go up tempo?
Like, you're 100% right on this one. No question. Mario does a lot, okay? And he probably spends more time recruiting during the season than any head coach in America. And that's where that right there, what you just described, can be a downfall of that. Because you're right. The head coach does have to be on top of that too. And he's got to be watching enough film of the opponent to where he has a feel for that. Because they showed it the week before against Syracuse. And it was an obvious adjustment to Miami's defense because it takes Lance Guidry out of his normal scheming pattern. But it looks like Lance is addressing that a little bit too, because this week he had a blitz ready to go that was probably an automatic because when Clemson was testing them in the hurry up on the second play, they blitzed.
Yeah, I hear you. But listen, I know – Mario's your buddy, and I like Mario. I was team Mario, right? When Manny was sucking so bad, I was team Mario. But he's not coaching like the $8 million man. He's just not. And he's got to come to Jesus real quick on what he wants to accomplish in his career at this point, because if he keeps coaching like this, he's never going to get past, you know, having an 8-9 win season as being his high watermark, because you can't consistently make these boneheaded plays and calls at this level. You just can't. The Georgia Techs and the Virginias of the world will eat your lunch every once in a while, and that's just going to stop all progression. You know, he has got to think more. He has to be cerebral, and he's not. He's like a Neanderthal with a freaking headset.
I don't know that that's fair. If anything, this week he overthought things.
Well, yeah, they should have opened the playbook. They should have opened the playbook because the play that I saw this weekend that said to me, this kid, he's going to be all right, it was 3rd and 11 in the fourth quarter with like a minute to go, and he threw it to Young, and literally there were 4 Clemson players right there, and he threw – the only pass that he could throw that would you know, end in a reception. And it was a great pass.
He threw a dart to a spot. It was amazing, yeah.
And he hit Kobe Young perfectly in his hands in stride the series before,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
So he made all the throws that you want him to make. So I think we're going to be okay. And I'm not gonna filibuster because I know a lot of people want to get their thoughts in, but I'm going to end on this. You have got to address these failures in recruiting defensive back. Like, this is embarrassing. That's embarrassing. What Blount just did to us, that's embarrassing, man. Embarrassing.
Well, he played them, and it was probably orchestrated by Florida State, and they won this one, you know? They just flat won this one, and tough to watch, especially when it's a Dade County kid. But, you know, it's recruiting, and unfortunately, not every family handles their business the same way, you know?
Yeah.
And this is bad.
In some of these positions, man. And you've alluded to some coaches that you think need to maybe be changed. I don't know.
It's not a matter of what I think needs to be changed. It's a matter of, I don't think that Mario is going to accept this level of recruiting. And I think there are some members of the staff that are not carrying their weight in recruiting. And I don't think that's going to be acceptable to him. You know, I mean, I just don't. But on the defense, just one thing I'll say on the defensive line thing, it's not over yet. And it's not like, what I would say is, don't panic, you know, just like, you know, people come try to steal their commitments. Miami's going to go try to steal other people's commitments. And, you know, signing day's not till the third week of December. So, you know, there's going to be a lot more recruiting to be done. There's going to be new guys that are going to emerge off the way they played in their senior seasons. There's going to be the transfer portal that will be a factor. Miami will be actively looking for defensive linemen in the transfer portal, I'm sure. So there's a long way to go before we start panicking here and saying, oh, my God. And then also remember, you got that defensive lineman from Alabama who's already on campus practicing. So, you know, that's a bonus pickup for this class.
Yeah, but we're losing Taylor, right? I mean, he's going to go.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Can you go get drafted in the first round off one game? To me, he's played one game this year. I don't know. You know, I'm sure he wants to go. But,
yeah,
you
sure.
know, it, maybe there's an NFL owner, you know, who's willing to risk $25 million on Leonard Taylor right now. But would you, based on what he's done so far?
I wouldn't, but I don't own an NFL team yet.
Yeah, so I don't consider that a given, that he's definitely out. You know, I think he would like to be, but if he's not a first-round draft pick, if they don't tell him he's going to be a first-round draft pick, he'd be out of his mind to leave, because he does have first-round type talent as a nose tackle in the NFL. So we'll see.
All right, man. I'll let you get to the other calls. Do you want me to stick around for some instant analysis?
No, we're good, man. I got a Zuby locked and loaded. But Sebastian, thank you so much, man.
Whenever you need me, you call me. Whenever you need me, I'll come into the studio.
You got it, man. I got your number. I got your number right here. If we need you, we'll call you. Thank you.
All right.
Appreciate it. All right. 563-999-3550. 563-999-3550. Hit the 1 on your keypad if you'd like to come on the show. Let's go now to the 845. You're live on Gamesport Live.
Hey, Gary, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, Greg? Hey, I got a question for you before you get on your box and lay it on us. What would you be saying right now had Miami not won that game in overtime?
I would have went ballistic on Mario.
Exactly.
By the way,
and that's the ragged edge, man. That's the ragged edge that these guys live on, you know?
Let me ask you a question. Mario's reasoning for not being aggressive at the end of that game is Clemson has an awesome pass rush. They didn't have a sack in the game, Gary. So
because Greg, you know why, though? A, the O-line played great, but a big reason they didn't have a sack in the game was Miami was controlling down and distance.
Okay, we got the first down with Chaney. Why couldn't we try some a deep pass? It's a, you got to be kidding, Gary.
I was saying the whole game. I thought they were being too conservative. I'm sitting there with Matt and Azubi the entire game saying they're going to lose this game because they're being too conservative. I'm right there with you. I mean, it was, you're pulling your hair out. Like, why are they being so conservative? Because Emery Williams was handling the whole thing pretty damn well. But you can't, what they did worked. They won.
Okay. I just wanted to say, Emery Williams, at the beginning of that game, you know who he reminded me of?
Who?
Evan Charisse, when he came in against Pittsburgh, when we were 10-0, he came in for Rozier in that game. He was getting passes batted down left and right. And then he showed me something in the second half. I got to give him credit for that.
Well, here's what I'll tell you, Greg. The speed that Clemson plays with on defense is a little bit different than what Emory sees on the practice field here at Miami right now. Okay, we don't have Clemson speed in the secondary.
Yeah. Well.
Or at linebacker, for that matter.
Okay, my next point. Could you explain to me why the University of Miami took 35 years to put these guys in the Ring of Honor?
Oh, my God. I agree totally. I said the same thing. I'm like, what in the world? We're just getting around to putting Jimmy Johnson and Dennis Erickson in the Ring of Honor? Are you kidding me? Dennis Erickson won 2 national titles.
And what about Chuck Foreman? Was great player.
All right, but that one, Miami's had a lot of great players through the years. All right, you can live with that one, okay? But Dennis Erickson and Jimmy Johnson? Are you kidding me?
That was the glory days of Miami football, and they took them 30 years to put them in the Ring of Honor.
And then they screwed up the videos during the presentation. Unbelievable.
Yeah. All right, my next point. You're absolutely right about Jaden Davis should be a slot cornerback. Put Takari Couch on the bench and put somebody with some goddamn height on the field at the cornerback position.
Well, it's funny. I asked Lance Guidry.
Damari Brown or the kid from Vanderbilt, they're all 6'1". Or taller.
Yeah, I asked Lance Guidry about that. At Monday's press conference, I asked him about that, Greg. And he said they're going to keep doing what they're doing, and they'll worry about bigger receivers when they have to face bigger receivers. I don't think that they can play Florida State with Jaden Davis and even maybe Takari Couch at cornerback.
And they're going to cover those 6'5" guys?
I don't think they can. It's going to be very interesting. They may make Florida State complete some first, but I don't know that they can. The thing that I'm struggling with, that I haven't really been able to get my hands around it, is why the Brown brothers are struggling so much and why Jadeus Richard has a guy who played in the SEC last year. I mean, granted, it was at Vanderbilt. You know why he hasn't been able to play more, and I'm trying to put my hands around that. I do not have a complete understanding of why at this point. I gotta keep inquiring because it's weird, and those guys are just basically playing special teams. Azubi, aren't you kind of surprised that the Brown brothers and Jadeus Richard have really not been able to get much burn so far?
Yeah, no, I think we talked about it a couple of days ago. It's kind of odd that, Devontae Brown's coming from UCF where he was a solid contributor for the past 3 years. And, Jadeus Richard, like you mentioned, an SEC guy, obviously it's Vanderbilt, kind of the lower know, tier of the SEC, but he's the guy that Miami was really excited about coming into the portal, and, you know, Brown coming through the portal. But it is very, you know, head-scratching to see them not being used at all. Maybe something behind the scenes. Maybe they're more confident with Jaden Davis. Obviously, we know in the run game, Jaden Davis is very solid. But, you know, we saw it versus Clemson. They were targeting him with a bigger receiver who just went up, you know, on top of him, caught that pass and should have caught two more that, you know, Davis got away with two, you know, pass interference plays. But very interesting to see, you know, that they're not being used. And very interesting to see or hear Lance Guidry kind of say it like that and saying, hey, we're not going to change anything until we need to. So going to be interesting to see how that kind of all plays out in the next few games. And, you know, when you think of big receivers, the first thing that came to my mind is versus Florida State. Keon Coleman, who's 6'4", one of the best wideouts in the country, and then we have Johnny Wilson, who's 6'7", on the other side. So if there's a time to kind of figure that out right now, I feel like it'd be, you know, better to do it before FSU and all that stuff. But, you know, very interesting to kind of see them sticking with him and not using those other two guys that were really highly touted.
Yeah. All righty, Greg, you got anything else for us tonight?
Last one. Okay. We got played by this blunt kid. Don't we have three guys from Miami Central in the recruiting department? They
you know, that was my reaction to Greg. You know, that was why, you know, it's like everybody wants to scream about Mario. Oh, he's supposed to be a great recruiter. How's he losing these guys? Mario had hired, he's hired three or four guys for the pure purpose of not losing people in Dade County. This kid played them from the beginning, Greg. You could have eight guys. You know, he got roped in by Florida State and their staff, and you know, I'm sure they're giving him a very nice NIL deal or whatever, and I think they manipulated him into disrespecting Miami. Him and his mom. I mean, his mom, listen, ultimately to me, the parents responsible. You know, when my kids were in high school or younger, I felt I was responsible for my kids' behavior, because it's my place as a parent to teach them the right way to handle their business. And this was not the right way to handle business. So, like, you know, ultimately, it's a shared parent-child situation, and they played Miami. There's no question about it. I think the whole thing was orchestrated. I think even the commitment a couple weeks ago was orchestrated, because you don't commit and then decommit 2 weeks later. I mean, I think this whole thing was a pre-planned, orchestrated, embarrassed Miami moment by Florida State, and there's only one way to pay them back, and that's in 3 weeks when we go to Tallahassee. You got to win that game. That's the only way that you can repay them for what they did here these last few weeks and what they pulled with the Blunt family.
And what's going on with Artavius Jones? Is he going to pull the same stunt as Blunt?
Hard to say, man. What do you think, Azubi? He lives up, you know, much closer to Florida State than he does to Miami. But Florida State's desperate for defensive tackles, just like the Hurricanes are. I'm sure that the NIL is very aggressive by both schools. What do you think on that one, Azuki?
Yeah, man, that's one that we kind of had on our radar, you know, before the Armando Blunt situation that, you know, Steve and I have been really looking at. And, you know, he's been to Florida State, I believe, more in the last 3 weeks than he's been to Miami, you know, this whole year. So that's, you know, never a good sign with him visiting. You know, like you mentioned, Bluntstown is much, much closer to Tallahassee than it is to the University of Miami. And he's a real big, you know, I want to stay home, be close to family type of thing. And, you know, once he committed to Miami in July, FSU never stopped, you know, recruiting him and has been on him. And, you know, there's interest there for sure with him visiting twice in, I believe, the last 3 weeks. So that's one that's not looking, you know, too good for Miami right now. But, you know, you never know with things and how things work with recruitment. But, you know, right now I would keep a very, very close eye on that Artavius Jones situation, and yeah, I am a little bit concerned, you know, with that, just how things have played out recently and how Gary mentioned how desperate they are with defensive tackles and, you know, all that stuff. So definitely a situation we are still closely monitoring and, you know, have heard some buzz around for sure.
Okay. All righty,
Greg.
Thank you.
There you go, man.
Thank
we'll
you.
Talk to you next week.
All right. Fine.
Yep. Thanks for being part of the show, as always. 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. Hit the 1 on your keypad. You want to come on the show? Let's go to the 757. You're live on Canesport Live.
Yeah, Gary Nazoo, how you doing? Hey, Gary, it's a lot of time I be listening to you, man. I'm letting you know you're cutting it close. I ain't going to tell you what you're cutting it close with, but you're cutting it close, buddy. You're going to say, yeah, Jimmy Johnson and them should have been in there, no doubt. But then you want to kind of downplay Chuck Funk. Come on, bro, you can't do that, man. I'm watching you.
No, that's not what I was saying. I was not downplaying.
No, but it's the way it comes. It's the way it comes out. TVD is cheering your boy on this and that. Man, TVD ain't won nothing. You know what? I would play Emory from here on out. He beat Clemson. TVD beat Texas A&M. And he's been there 2 years. He ain't beat nobody. He lost to FSU twice. He lost to Carolina twice. But you know what I noticed? He probably played real good this week because he's worried now. And remember the other thing you said when DeAndre King was playing. He gives us the best chance to win. I know you said it, but guess what happened? TVD came off the best 5 games, and what about DeAndre King? Don't know where to be found. Y'all kill me with this. Oh, we don't have anybody else to try to win the game. Man, they don't recruit these players unless they can play. So with all this stuff y'all saying, how true King fans are you? I'm trying to figure it out myself.
King, give me a break.
I'm going to pick you apart. No, you don't. Go ahead. Hold up. What? Go ahead. Talk. Talk. Right. I'm getting off the phone.
Chuck Foreman, okay? That is absolutely not what I was saying. I grew up watching Chuck Foreman. Chuck Foreman had a great NFL career. Chuck Foreman was a great player. But Miami has had a lot of great running backs through the years, and I'm not as bothered by the fact that it took Chuck Foreman this long to get in the Ring of Honor as I am that it took this long for Dennis Erickson and Jimmy Johnson to get in the Ring of Honor. That is what I was saying.
That's why you were saying it. Well, all of them should have been in there. Matter of fact, everybody plays in my matter of fact, you can put Reuben Bain in there tomorrow if you want to. The way he plays. Put him in there tomorrow. And, oh, yeah, the other thing, all them kids, and I was at the game. Eventually, I'm going to find you and Azubi. But any of these kids want to go pro, because you ain't going to get drafted. If they don't see how these kids been leaving early in the last 10 years at Miami, this is not Miami of old, where you can just walk in the stage and say, we're from the U. Oh, you're a first-round pick. Lenatella Lee, he's playing himself. Cam Kitchens Lee, he's not playing himself, but he don't need to leave. William, none of them. Nobody needs to leave. Even your boy, TVD, he needs to stay. Maybe he can check off a little bit better this week. Because I watched Emory. Emory did look to the right, and then he looked to the left and threw the ball. TV do that when he on pressure. So now he got pressure because you see this young boy did play good enough to win us the game, and I'm very proud of him. The running backs, we stack. I think that's the stackedest position on the team. But, you know, hey, I'll see you this week. I'm going to try to get my man to get my ticket. Matter of fact, where is the cane walk located at, Gary? If you don't mind me asking.
It's the southwest corner of the stadium, and it's about 2 hours and 15 minutes before kickoff.
God, that's a long. Okay, I'm gonna see what I can do, but I got 2 more games I'm coming to. And no, I'm not gonna make the NC State game. My boss can't get it to me off, but that's fine. Azubi, it's all good, baby. We look good. We're gonna be fine. But an FSU game, I love to win. And I ain't gonna say the kids play. Man, everybody, all this recruit stuff, I think it's the money. The money got everybody going crazy. NIL, like you said, they probably gave the boys a good deal with the NIL, whatever be the case. But with that being said, hey. We did beat Clemson. Ain't beat them since 2009 or 10. Everybody happy, but let's just keep it moving. And with that being said, I ain't got no more to say. I ain't getting riled up no more. I get riled up if we lose to Virginia, though. Anybody don't want to have a show, but we see what they did to Carolina. But, hey, that's the way it goes. Hey, ride or die. See y'all in the 305 on Saturday. Take care. Peace.
All right, Kane. Thanks, as always, for being part of the show. 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. Hit the 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. We're going now to the 917. You're live on Canesport Live.
Hey, what's up, Gary? BK Hurricane.
What's up, BK? How you doing this week, man?
I'm doing all right. Gary, quick question. What's the plan for Ja'Cory Brown?
Red shirt this year, and then he's got a decision to make. He's got a, you know, I'd like to think he'll stick it out and compete in spring practice, but he might not. I mean, listen, like, to me, if he were my son, I would sit down and I would say this. Look, a true freshman just came in and beat you out. Okay, you weren't as good as PVD. You know, they're going to keep recruiting quarterbacks. You have a choice to make. You want to keep pushing this quarterback thing? If you do, we got to go in the portal, and you got to go to a school where they want a different type of quarterback, where they want a more of a run pass quarterback, and they want to run a different kind of offense. The type of offense Miami is running is not for Ja'Cari Brown, unless he wants to try to be a wide receiver. If he wants to try to be a wide receiver, which I think he would be a great wide receiver. I mean, he's big, he's athletic. I mean, I think he's Colby Young and more if he becomes a receiver. But that's his decision. He's going to have to make it. If the decision is I want to keep playing quarterback, I think he's got to go on the portal in December. But they're doing the right thing by him by redshirting him because he's not blowing eligibility. He will still be in good shape eligibility-wise with 3 years to play when he goes somewhere else.
Robert, do you think with the quarterbacks that are in the pipeline with, was it Judd Anderson, whatever the kid's name is, and the kid that played on Saturday, I keep forgetting his name, right?
Emery Williams.
Emery Williams, right? Do you think that style of quarterback could get us to the next level? Because if we had a more athletic quarterback, particularly against Georgia Tech, and particularly against North Carolina, the outcomes of those games might have been different.
Well, listen, if the rest of your team is right, BK, if the rest of your team is right, if you're right at running back, which they are, they're in a good place at running back, and they got a guy coming in that might be better than anybody, and they got Citizen coming back. Okay, they're in a great place at running back. I think they'll continue to be in a good place at receiver. They'll keep recruiting. My God, if they don't ever do anything else, they got to get Jeremiah Smith to come to Miami. I don't know if they'll be able to, but they get Jeremiah Smith to come to Miami with the other guys they're recruiting at receiver and the guys they got coming back. They're in a great place at receiver. They're in a good place at tight end if they ever start using these guys and they don't start getting antsy and run to the portal. And they're in a good place at offensive line and should progressively continue to be with Mario and Mirabal recruiting that position. So with everything right on offense, the way it looks like it is and is going to be, to me, yeah, you can win with Emery Williams and Tyler Van Dyke and this style quarterback. And if Tyler Van Dyke goes into the NFL, which I don't see how he can at this point, but if he were to do that, then I think they go to the transfer portal and get the best guy. If Tyler Van Dyke comes back and you got he and Emery and Judd, and then we'll see what Ja'Cari does. But I don't know that they go into the portal until next year looking for a quarterback, and they probably ride with those three guys. But, you know, we'll see. But I don't think you have to have a running quarterback. And look at I'll tell you, if you want to use an example, look at Georgia back when they had Justin Fields and God, I'm trying to remember. Zuby, you remember the name of the Georgia quarterback when they won the national title, the first one?
The first one was Stetson Bennett.
Stetson Bennett, yeah. Okay, so they had him and they had Justin Fields, and they made a decision. And remember, Fields was a better runner, but they made a decision that Bennett was a better all-around quarterback and a better passer. They let Justin Fields go to Ohio State, okay? And so, you know, if you have a team that is right at the other positions, I think you want PVD Emery Williams, an accurate thrower, a guy that can, you know, spread the field. And then you just get the ball to your playmakers and let them make plays.
But it would take years for us to get to that level.
Why? We're there now. You get Jeremiah Smith on this team, you're there now, BK. They're not that far off, man. The way this offensive line is developing, remember, this is a young offensive line.
Right. That's a long shot for us to get Jeremiah Smith.
It probably is, but, you know, I mean, that's what they're, you know.
even if TBD does decide, you know what, I'm going to come back another year, Mario would be a fool not to still try to go after the best quarterback in the portal.
It'll be interesting. I hear what you're saying, man. I hear what you're saying. I don't know which way it's going to go there. Azubi, what do you think? Do they go try to get the best quarterback in the country that's in the portal?
That's a very hard decision because, you know, on the message boards, a lot of people have kind of asked, you know, about, you know, what that quarterback situation is going to look like. And I've never really kind of took into consideration TBD coming back until, you know, those last two games where he really, really struggled and it's kind of, you know, head-scratching. But, you know, I think Miami still has to look at that option because, obviously, you know, things aren't working out to, you know, as you want with TBD. And, you know, his third year coming back, it's like, all right, is this the guy that, you know, you think can lead you to, you know, a national championship or a national prominence? And that's a decision I feel like Miami has to kind of really evaluate this season because you never know with some of these big names that hop into the portal and, you know, that might be a guy that they think can fit in the offense better or, you know, bring them farther. So that's going to be a really, really hard, tough decision at the end of the year. But I think they still have to kind of, you know, do that and look into the portal to upgrade because you're always looking to upgrade a team no matter what. If it's at the quarterback, if it's at the offensive line, if it's on the defense side of the ball, you're always looking to upgrade the team. So that'll be a very interesting situation, you know, at the end of the year.
But if they have Tyler Van Dyke and Emery Williams both back next year, what quarterback from the portal is going to come to Miami?
Gary, let me give you an example. Take a look at Ole Miss's quarterback roster. Last year they picked up two quarterbacks out of the portal that were starters on the teams that they left. And Lane Kiffin didn't offer them anything but an opportunity to play. Now, granted, they didn't beat out the Jackson Dart kid, but if you look at that quarterback roster that Ole Miss has, it's impressive. They had Oklahoma State starting quarterback the year before, and he was pretty damn good. He ended up going to Ole Miss. He was just only offered an opportunity. So now what happens if Jackson Dart goes down? Look at what you got behind you. If next year we go into a season and, God forbid, Tyler Van Dyke gets hurt again, you think I'm going to be happy watching Emery Williams roll out there?
Oh, Emery Williams next year. Next year, Emery Williams will be a whole different level, BK. He'll be at a whole other level. I feel confident. I've watched this kid in practice. I've watched his workouts. I know, I see what type of kid he is. I feel very confident that Emery Williams next year, a year from now, after one more year of work and learning, will be a phenomenal quarterback. I was just going to say, I think Ja'Kari Brown's decision will influence a lot too. Because even if he moves the receiver, you've always got him available to be an emergency.
Gary, we said the same thing about Tyler Van Dyke. I'm still waiting to see the 2021 Tyler Van Dyke. He hasn't shown up yet. He has not shown up yet. The 2021 Tyler Van Dyke, those last eight games, was amazing.
Yeah.
We haven't gotten that yet from Tyler Van Dyke. So there's no guarantee that Riley Williams will be that guy, but I could guarantee you if there's some hot shot somewhere else and said, you know what, I always wanted to go to Miami. Hey, wait a minute, the NIL deal is right. I'm going to Miami. Can you say no to that guy? You can't.
I hear you, but I don't think that they would do that to Tyler and Emery.
It's not a matter of doing that to Tyler and Emery. Mario needs to win.
I mean, if it's not
be upfront and honest with these guys and say, listen, I have all the faith in you guys, but I have to fortify this roster. And the best man, I'm going to let the best man play. I think those two guys are mature enough to handle that.
We'll see, man. It'll be interesting to see. I don't know. I don't have the answer for you on that one at this point.
And to be honest with you, I don't think Tyler Van Dyke is coming back, regardless of what happens.
I don't know that he can go right now.
Well, Gary,
I don't know, man.
It's either you leave now or You know what I'm saying? Like, he had a chance to go to Alabama. We all know. Oh, it's a rumor. It was probably pretty close that when Alabama came sniffing around, I'm pretty sure that they were interested. You know, they listened. I'm almost certain they listened. Because if Alabama came sniffing around me, I'd listen. So, Tyler Van Dyke, I'm pretty sure he's gone.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't see how he can go. I don't see how he can go. He'd be like the 10th or 11th quarterback on the board.
But, Gary, plenty of guys are just fed up with, you know what, I'm tired of college. I'm just going to get my NFL career started, get out of that first contract so I could go on. It's that first contract. You got to make it to the second contract. That's where the money is.
Yeah, but he'll get money in that.
I'm not going to waste another year at University of Miami. God forbid I get hurt again, and then my career is shot.
Because you got to remember, they're getting paid now, BK. They get paid now.
Gary, I understand. They're getting paid. But that's
– Tyler Van Dyke is several $100,000. He's getting – Tyler Van Dyke, I don't know what the exact number is, but he's getting several $100,000 this year.
Gary, I hear you. I hear you. And if he's doing the right thing with that money, he should go to the NFL.
Now, we'll see.
To be brutally honest with you, he should go.
But if he goes to the NFL, they definitely go in the portal and get the best quarterback they can to compete with Emory.
They have to go in the portal anyway. That's just my opinion. But the last thing, I'm watching a game on Saturday, and I'm on Twitter at the same time, and I'm seeing everybody rip Mario. I'm like, what is it? They have no confidence in this kid, in this game right now, because it's still Clemson. They were super conservative because, number one, it's Clemson's defense, and number two, you're throwing in a – how old is Emory? 19?
18, yeah, probably 18. It wasn't that they don't have confidence.
Kid in his first game is against Clemson? I don't care how bad Clemson is.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You want to let the kid throw the ball all over the field?
No, they didn't.
And then let the immaturity of some of these wide receivers step in. Look at Breshard Smith. He almost blew it when he dropped that, when he fumbled the ball. Thank God for, you know, Jacoby George.
Yeah, I agree.
Look at Jacoby George on the deep pass. He didn't cut the cornerback. And guess what? Interception.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't. Like, I was going crazy trying to figure out what people are mad about. And I'm looking at this kid like they don't have that much confidence in him when you're
What it was, BK. It wasn't that they don't have confidence in him, because Emory Williams is great on the practice field. He's great. It wasn't confidence in him. It was the speed that Clemson plays at was unlike anything Emory Williams would have ever seen before.
Well, there you go. I just didn't understand the Mario bashing. I'm like,
people bash everybody about everything. People bash everybody about everything. I mean, that's the world we live in. But Miami on defense does not play, especially on the practice field, at the speed that Clemson plays at.
Well, that's because we don't have what Clemson has on D. Did you see them?
Correct.
See the DBs of Clemson?
Correct.
And
correct.
The linebacker, the Trotter kid?
Correct. And that's why they were conservative. That's why they were conservative. That's why they were
amazing.
Yeah. Well, that's why they were conservative. All righty, BK, you got anything else for us tonight?
All right, Gary.
All right, man. We'll talk to you next. Talk to you next week. Yep. Thank you. Thanks as always for being part of the show. All right. 563-999-3550. 563-999-3550. Hit the 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. We're going now to the 706. You're live on Kingsport Live.
Hey, Gary, it's your boy Sebastian. Can you hear me?
Yep. What's up, Sebastian? How you doing this week, man?
Hey man, I just want to tell you that you and Azubi and the whole entire team is putting on a good show tonight. I think we should go ahead and move on from Armando Blount from Miami Central. I think there's going to be enough. There's enough talent that's going to be in Dade County, and I think there's a lot of local kids in South Miami, in South Florida, that will give the Hurricanes a shot if they see that we have a good product on the field and they have a good opportunity to win.
And in the portal, and you've got Burrows from Alabama there already. You've got Josh Horton, who I think by next year should be ready to go, who's going to be a very good defensive lineman. You're okay. You need one or two more guys. No argument. But I think that they'll be able to go find them either through traditional recruiting or in the portal.
Yeah. Gary, how impressed are you with our two coordinators, offense and defense? I thought both under the circumstances that they were faced with this week against Clemson and a hurt Tyler Van Dyke. I mean, I give those guys so much credit. As much as I give a lot of credit to Mario Cristobal, who I think, good, bad, or indifferent, look, there's a lot of games we've watched over the last 5 to 10 years as Canes fans that if we're losing by 10 points in the fourth quarter, we don't pull it out. And so I just want to get you and Azubi's thoughts on how impressed are you guys with our coordinators this year.
I like them both. I like them both. You know, I think that there are some learning, you know, things that are going on. That, you know, they're both their first time having to do it on this type of stage at this level. But I think they're both keepers, and I like them both. And I like the way Lance Guidry bounced back this week from North Carolina. I thought he was he raised his game and was really ready to go. Azubi, your thoughts?
Yeah, I have to agree. I feel like both these hires are home runs. And I'll start with Dawson. And a stat I saw is, you know, so far this year, Miami's beaten two top 10 defenses in the country with Texas A&M coming first and, you know, now Clemson. So just off that alone, you see progression, you know, with everything on the offensive side of the ball. And beating Clemson, you know, one of the top teams in our defense of the country with a true freshman quarterback is another thing. So kudos to that. And with Lance Guidry, you know, going back to Clemson again, a team that, you know, over the last couple of years have, you know, put up 35, 40, and 50 against Miami, holds them to 20 points, 33 rushing yards after what happened to in North Carolina. And just overall, the defense just seems like it's flying around much more, very, very aggressive tackling. I feel like that hasn't been an issue as it's been, you know, the past couple of years. So he's fixed kind of everything, the linebacker play. We see Corey Flagg, you know, coming up with that big tackle. Francis Malgo has been doing an excellent job. Just all around, I feel like you see improvement in the team, and that's all you ask for from the coordinators. And, you know, I that's why I'm kind of saying these were home run hires right now for me.
Yeah, that's how, you know, that's how I feel. You know, as I look at these guys, I'm trying to see, do they make adjustments week to week? Are they getting the most out of their players? Are we not beating ourselves? You know, I mean, we're tackling better this year on the offensive side. We're running the ball a lot better. Here's the thing that I've been thinking about is, do we win the game at Carolina if he were to take somewhat of an approach that he did at Clemson? You know, as much as I love Tyler Van Dyke and he has a great arm, I think there's something to be said. We're taking a lot of checkdowns. And I don't think Tyler, it's boom or bust sometimes. And I'm just like, I like those not getting behind the sticks, you know. And so I thought he managed Emory very, very well this year. And so I'm just wondering if we'd had that type of approach, we'd had a different outcome. I asked last week, I don't know if you remember, Gary and Azubi, I said, look, are we more of a 4-2 team or more of a 5-1 team? You remember that question I asked last week?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so we go through a week like this week, and we win against Clemson, and there's a lot of good teams in the top 10 that are 6-1, and we're only a couple of plays from actually being that team 6-1. So I'm not trying to get ahead of ourselves. I'm just saying, all of the metrics that I see this year, for as much as we can complain about, are going in a positive way. And as much as we want to be am I right? I mean, all the missed tackles, we're not having a lot of missed tackles. I think, I don't know where we stand at penalty-wise, but offense is better. Defense is better. Special teams is better. I mean, we've taken the kickback for a touchdown. We got a good kicker. We had a good kicker. We got a good punter. So I just kind of feel like if we don't beat ourselves, I think we have a chance to be in every game from here out to the rest of the season. And I think for the most part, there's not a team that we're going to face that I don't think that we cannot beat. Now, Florida State is going to be a challenge, but what are some things that you think we need to do to get to Florida State?
Well, they got to not beat Virginia and NC State first and not worry about Florida State. Okay, let's not blow one of these two games. They're better than those two teams. Go out and show it. It's time. You know, you're seeing improvement. The offensive line against Clemson had their best game ever. Okay, they were dominant in the second half. And they really showed their training and they showed their development. And now they got to build on that. And if they can go up to Tallahassee and play the way they played against Clemson the other day and execute like they were, Miami's going to win that game. I really feel that will happen if the offensive line continues the progression that they showed. But they got to take one game at a time. There's too much unevenness to their game so far this year, in my opinion. Phenomenal against Texas A&M, phenomenal against Clemson, not so great against Georgia Tech, not so great against North Carolina. So consistency, we got to see consistency.
No, I'm right there with you. I mean, I'll take a one-point win against both NC State and Virginia, I would love to go to Tallahassee 7-2. To face whether it's an undefeated team. I think if we get past the next two games and we play against Florida State, I think we just need to do ball control. I think we don't need to keep giving Jordan Travis the ball that many times. But I'm like you, Gary. I'm not going to get ahead of ourselves. I don't think Virginia's a gimme game. I don't think NC State's a gimme game. What I think those two games are those are two big recruiting games. If we can win those next two games, if we're a 7-2 team and we go to Florida State, Miami's on prime time, and they're a very, very attractive draw for them to move forward.
You'd probably be looking at game day in Tallahassee, I'm guessing, and yeah. I mean, yeah. it would be prime time ABC almost definitely. You know, Florida State's going to be undefeated. You know, yeah, I would think that would definitely be prime time ABC.
Yeah, so I don't think they need to, you know, kind of blow it up. I don't want to lose all my time, but can both you and Azubi talk to me? Who are some of the unsung heroes this year that you would say probably exceeded our expectation and has really contributed to the team success this year?
Yeah, Azubi, you take it first.
I'll start on the defensive side of the ball, say Daryl Porter Jr., because honestly, this year he has been the best cover, you know, defensive back for the Hurricanes, you know. Game in and game out. I feel like I haven't, you know, had one time this year I'm like, dang, Daryl Porter just really messed up, or dang, Daryl Porter, what are you doing on that play? He's been sound in tackling. He's been sound in coverage and, you know, honestly kind of, I wouldn't say shut down one side of the field, but, you know, he's darn close to doing so. And on that offensive line, or on the offense side of the ball, I just have to give it to the whole offensive line group, because last year we saw the struggles with that group and just how frustrating it was and just, you know, week in and week out, you see another guy going down. You see another guy, you know, in and out of the lineup. And this year, since game one to now, you've seen the same five guys across that line dominate and showcase, you know, why Miami invested so much in that offensive line, why Coach Cristobal and Coach Mirabal put so much emphasis on saying, hey, we got to win in the trenches, and that'll help our football team. And, you know, from Jalen Rivers playing left tackle, I feel like you don't hear his name at all this year, and I feel like that's a great thing because he's doing his job. And from Jalen Rivers to the right side to Francis Malagoa to, you know, Inez Cooper to Matt Lee and Javion Cohen, you know, all those guys have been so solid and so sound. And I feel like obviously they get their credit, but just the work they do kind of gets underappreciated. And I feel like that just their report on the defense side of the ball and that whole offensive line group is just, I have to give my flowers to them so far this season.
I'll agree on Porter. I'll throw another guy in there, Jacoby George. Massively better this year than he's been the last couple years, and is making a bigger impact than I expected. So, you know, the offensive line to me is young. You know, we didn't really know one way or the other. you know that they're good recruits and they've done a good job there. But Jacoby George to me has come kind of out of nowhere to have a pretty darn good season. And the fact that he was there to cover up for Breshard Smith's fumble, which was, to me, was inexcusable. I mean, the run was great. He burst through the hole. He went the distance of the field. But my God, man, you can't fumble that ball. I mean, come on, man. Like that's like unforgivable. But Jacoby George was there to back him up. Defensively, I agree with Porter. I would probably say Porter too. He's been rock solid all year. And I'm going to throw another guy out there that I think has been really good. And that's the punter, Dylan Joyce. I mean, he's come out of nowhere, you know, and has really been pretty good.
No, I appreciate it. The person I was wanting to hear was Jalen Rivers. Zuby, you're absolutely right. We don't even hear his name. I can't tell you the last time he's blown, he's called a sack. I don't know when he's actually had a false start, a holding penalty. I mean, I hope this guy plays on Sunday. I mean, this guy is just an absolute believer. I was shaking in my boots when they said he was going to be our starting left tackle, but I don't hear nothing about Jalen Rivers. I mean, so I'm really impressed with the whole entire team. I'm nervous about Virginia. I think we should win. I really, really hope that we do because we have to start winning against teams that we sometimes have or that we're successful of losing. Here's my last comment. You put me on hold. We have to acknowledge the fact that Clemson has been the gold standard in the ACC. The last four or five times we played them, I think the average margin of victory was about 35 points. Do we have the roster that tells Clemson have? No way. We're probably nowhere close. We're probably not as far away. But to beat a Clemson team that was ranked preseason number 10, that leads the nation in defense, and not have our starting quarterback, a lot of credit has to go to the coaching staff and the players for absolutely showing up. And in the ACC, you take any victory, you take a victory any way you can get it. I would take a 20 or 17 win against Georgia Tech, you know, as ugly as it is, I would take that today. So just kind of keep me on hold, man. I appreciate what you guys are doing. Only comment I have for you is, you know, is there anything that we should be doing now over the next five games that could really, really make the difference in us having a great season? What would that be? And keep me on hold.
Wow. The next five games, what would make it a great season? Well, win for starters. But, you know, Zuby, I think that they just got to be more consistent. Like, they're doing everything well at different times. They're just not putting it all together at the same time enough. You know, they've run the ball well at times. They've thrown the ball well at times. They've done a decent job protecting the quarterback. They've only given up 8 sacks so far this year. The other night we saw the running game doing really well. On defense, they've been great against the run. But they were horrendous against the run against North Carolina. I mean, what the hell was that all about? I mean, how do you hold Clemson to 30 yards rushing and get gashed at North Carolina the way they did? Like, that shows you that this football team's just not mature yet. When they can, you know, have some consistency week to week, some weeks they've defended the pass well, some weeks they haven't. So, Zuby, I think just consistency, man.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with you. I was going to say the same thing. Just, you know, keep that level-headed mindset of, you know, hey, we're here to do our jobs, you know, day in and day out, get better, you know, day by day. And like I said a little bit earlier, don't let the highs get too high and don't let the lows get too low. Just float in that median where it's, hey, we're here to do our jobs and just keep forward. But, yeah, consistency would be the biggest thing that this team needs to do to finish out these last five games on a high note and head into bowl season potentially as a, you know, 9-win team or 8-win team or, you know, anything like that. So it just stay consistent, and I think this team can surprise a lot more people down the stretch and kind of, you know, play their way to a really big bowl game. That'll be huge for not only the momentum of the team, but for recruiting and, you know, a bunch of other things, you know, outside of football as well.
All right, let's go out to the 386. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Gary.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Gary, look, I'm going to tell you up front, I apologize that I can't be as upbeat about Mario as you are tonight. I apologize. I'm sorry. But I just can't. I'm with the guy that called in probably the second or third caller tonight. I'm with him. Mario Cristobal, what we are getting at, Gary, listen to me. This is what we are getting at as Canes fans. If we had lost that game Saturday night, and I'm jumping over the moon, glad that we won. Lord knows I'm glad we won. But if we had lost that game, Mario Cristobal would have been right back to where he was post-Georgia Tech. Now, look, we got two, in my personal opinion, outstanding basketball coaches who don't beat themselves. Mario, you need to join the party. And this is what we're getting at. We escaped Saturday night, but what about the next time? What about the next time these boneheaded decisions getting beat by teams that we should that shouldn't even be on the field with us all because of decision that he's making. So here's my question. Here's my question. And it may sound like a dumb question, but, hey, look, I'm just trying to save Canes Fans Nation heartache down the road. How do you feel about Mario Cristobal, and I'm just going to throw a name out there, just hiring someone that's been a head coach as another eye and ear, not necessarily coaching a position, but just as another eye and ear to help him out, like, say, somebody like a Chris Peterson, because he scares me. I'm sorry, but he scares me. He scares me. So what do you think about that idea?
I would have no problem with what you're saying, and I agree with you. If they lose that game the other night, he's getting blistered by everybody. But this is the life these guys live. I mean, he makes a decision that was a horrible decision against Georgia Tech, and it burned him, and it's going to take him a long time to live that one down. He made a decision the other night to kill the ball in regulation, and if they lose that game, people would have been all over him. That one worked out for him. I mean, I think for the most part, Mario is doing a good job with the program. I mean, I don't think they're close to where it needs to be at in any way, not in recruiting, not on the field. This is turning into a little bit of a more difficult, probably four-year project, and that's if things go well, because guys are going to graduate and leave. I mean, you got to keep replacing talent pretty good here. But he made the big mistake, and that's going to stick with him for a long time. And people are going to be looking to jump on him. They're waiting. People are just waiting for the next thing to go wrong so they can jump on him.
But
if they lose that game the other night, you're all over him, Will. I mean, right?
Because, Gary, I'm looking at what could possibly be coming down the road. What could possibly be – he got to make better decisions. He gives us the impression, Canes, we this big bad team, we're going to impose our will on you regardless of the situation, regardless of what the score is, we're going to impose our will on you, but you playing for overtime, though.
I understand, but let me ask you a question. You use the terminology better decisions, okay? They won the game the other night. His decision worked. Now, at the time, I was flipping out just like you were, trust me. Zuby will tell you, we're sitting in the press box, oh, my God. Like, you just don't ever see that in football. A minute 30, you got the ball at your 40-yard line or so. Like, you don't ever see that where a team just sits on and says, oh, let me go take my chances in overtime, especially college football overtime, where the ball goes on the 25-yard line and it's goofy, man. It's like you have one bad play or one bad moment. You're in serious trouble in that game. That was a major risk he took. But when you use the term better decisions, the only better decisions are the ones that work, and this one did work.
Okay, well, like I say, I'm looking down the road. Okay, are we going to be able to escape the next time? But Hey, glad we won the game.
Might not be the same. Will, the decision might not be the same the next time around. If Tyler Van Dyke were out there the other day with his experience and his command of the offense, I don't think the same decision is made. I think they're going for it.
I would have to agree with that. Hey, listen, my second question is I want to ask you, if I'm a big-time high school recruit or someone in the transfer portal that's playing tight end, why should I come to Miami? I mean, it's like the tight end is an afterthought in this offense. Right or wrong?
You're 100% right. I don't know why that's the case, other than that Arroyo has just gotten healthy. Riley Williams is a true freshman, and McCormick is a blocking tight end. So it hasn't been a priority to this point. I will be shocked if there are not moments here in these last five games where the tight ends get much more burn.
Okay, well, my last point is I called a show about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I said that Breshad Smith needed to touch the ball more than 2 or 3 times a game. This guy is, to me, a junior Santana Moss. He has that kind of potential.
But he's not, Will, and let me tell you why he's not. And I understand what you're seeing, and you absolutely did say that, and congratulations for seeing that, having that vision. But he's not, and I'm going to tell you why. You threw the ball to him last year at a key moment in the Texas A&M game, and he dropped the ball, okay? And I can't remember every single opportunity he's had, but heck, the other day you put him in the game, your offensive line, the blocking on that play could not have been better. They create a massive hole for him. He busts through the hole. He's running down the field and he doesn't protect the football and he loses it. And you know what? If Clemson had recovered that ball and Jacoby George had not been hustling the way he did, they might lose that game, Will, because of the mistake that Breshad Smith made. So that's why I'm not ready to agree with what you're saying. I think he's a good college football player. I don't know that he's showing you the maturity and the consistency and the reliability. I think people are getting caught up in the flash, and they're ignoring the fact that the substance is not really there.
Okay, but this is what I was going to ask. Shannon Dawson was asked in the press conference on Monday, you know, he was asked about this, and the answer he gave, you know, I can't make any sense of the answer he gave. He said, I have to get to know him better. I mean, what does that mean? I have to get to know him better.
He does not show this consistently, not at practice, not in games. You know, you're seeing flashes. You know, Shannon Dawson's been here the entire year. We're getting ready to go into November, and you're hearing what he's saying. That means he hasn't seen it with consistency on the practice field either. Like, this is a kid that they had to sit down, they had to call his mom into the office last season, in the middle of the season, and have a heart-to-heart, because he wasn't doing the right things. And that's why he wasn't playing, and that's why they didn't have the confidence to put him out there. So, like, we're seeing a good kick return here, a good running play there, and we're reacting to that and saying, oh, my God, now we got to turn this guy into Desmond Howard, or so. And like, that's just not – I don't know that that's reality. And even when he's succeeding, like the other day, he dropped the damn ball inside the 5-yard line. If they don't recover that – that is unforgivable, and they probably lose the game.
Okay. Well, hey, look, I'm going to get out of here on this. I'm over this Hugh Freeze, Lane Kiffin thing. I support Mario 100%, no doubt. He's our coach. Only thing I'm saying, bro, you gotta step your game up. You know, I see something coming down the road that is not going to be nice. You got to step your game up. That's all I'm saying. Once again, great show. I'm out of here.
All right, Will. Thanks for being part of it, man. We'll talk to you next week. Let's go to the 786. You're live on King Sport Live.
Hey, Gary and Azubi, how you guys doing tonight?
Hey, what's up, everything? How are you, man?
Doing phenomenal, man. Doing phenomenal. I wanted to bring up a couple of things, but I have a question for you. I don't know if Azubi can go ahead and piece this thing together. I'll be very honest. My recruiting is pretty much just when I come on and talk to you guys, especially with Azubi here once a week. But can you guys explain to me what happened with this kid from Central? I'm really, like, sincerely, like, in the woods here. What actually happened, you know? Like a timeline on it, what happened here?
They played Miami. It's very simple. Florida State put one over on Miami with the intent of embarrassing Miami, and they accomplished their mission. And Miami owes them one. It's that simple. And shame on the Armando Blunt and his family for being a part of that, because they are from Miami. They are from Miami Central. Which is, you know, he just came there from Dillard, okay? So he's not, like, part of the fabric at Miami Central. But now he does go to Miami Central, and he owed Miami, which was recruiting him very hard, better than that. He didn't have to go to Miami, but you don't commit and then go decommit a couple weeks later and play the hometown school the way you did and embarrass them the way that he did. I'm sorry. I have a major problem with that. We've obviously seen it before.
But, Gary, what happened? I mean, the kid committed. I mean, I'm just, you know.
It was all orchestrated by Florida State to embarrass
Miami.
They
made him commit to Miami on purpose? They made him commit to Miami on purpose just to play Miami? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, he wasn't really planning on going to Miami. You don't decommit and flip that quick if you were planning on going to Miami. And if you're planning on going to Miami, you're not at Florida State for the Duke game this past weekend. You're at the Hard Rock Stadium for the Clemson game. The whole thing was a ruse, man. They got played. Simple.
Okay. So he just wanted to, they just wanted to go ahead and play Miami this way. I got you. Okay. And he's going to reclassify and supposedly be ready to graduate in December?
Yes, and I don't think you'll see Miami recruit him anymore. That was a bad look.
Yeah. And weird, because if he's coming from Dillard, I guess there would be he'd have some solid connection, even though he's probably just a freshman or a sophomore.
You got to handle your business more professionally than that.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to go to Miami just because he's from Broward County. He doesn't have an obligation.
No, absolutely not. But if you're committing in the first place just to decommit 2 weeks later, then that tells me exactly who you are character-wise.
Yeah, the whole thing was a joke. Got to move on.
I made a point of this on the chat board yesterday. You no longer need to worry about getting all the kids in South Florida. You really don't. What you need to do is have a phenomenal player personnel guy, and we have in Zoe and Mike that are there, and everybody that's out there, all those guys that are going to be hitting the portal, all those guys that need to be, you know, you need to start having other people get out and reach out to them like everybody else is doing. That's what you need to be very good at. So when those guys come in, and there's a proven track record with the guys that we do have that have done that. It makes it a lot easier for the buy-in to be there. And then those guys are more mature mentally. I don't think you still have, if you're Miami or any other major power, I still think you want to have a decent core that's high school. But the majority of your immediate impact players, you know, are those transfer kids. I mean, look at where we're at currently with our classes. We have a couple of freshmen playing, and playing significantly, obviously. But you've got a lot of them just sitting because they're not ready to go yet. And they're developing. Some that are sitting and developing were here in the spring, and they're still not ready. Some just got here, and they're playing. Some are not. So it takes a while for that group to catch up and for the actual culture to go ahead and envelop them. But what you're seeing right now is a mastery of, and Mike Norvell has done this in the last 3 years in the portal, of getting the right portal kids that are impactful, that are going to come in, follow, and move on. And when you get those type of kids, and if you can get those type of transfers, and you surround them with some good young talent, and they're around these more mature guys, they basically what you're doing is you're also establishing what the expectations are, what's acceptable, what's unacceptable with your young ones. And I think that's where Mario has to excel at even more. Between him, Mike, and Alonzo, they've got to really do a really good job of that recruiting-wise. It's nice to have a top three class, no doubt about it. But you also look at the factor of how many kids that we signed that haven't played that are not a fit here. There's a couple of kids that are true freshmen that won't be with us, you know, come December. They just won't. It's going to happen. It's going to happen everywhere else around the country. It's going to happen, too. They're not a good fit. So those things are going to happen. But the main thing I think is if you sign a solid high school class, it doesn't have to be the immediate ones that have to come in and impact you right away. There aren't that many Ruben Baines in the world or Francis Malinowas. There's a few. And right now it doesn't appear that we have any of those type of kids in this class that's coming in. But you can go out there and feed what you need to feed into your program. So I think that's got to be – and I think that's why when you mentioned, hey, he's the only head coach probably that spends the number of hours recruiting than any other coach and head coach probably in the country. And that's fine. You know, you've got to know what you're good at and what you're not good at, and you've got to grow. But I think, essentially, Jimmy Johnson said it best. You know, when I went to Oklahoma, when he was at Oklahoma State, he had great teams, great guys, but they weren't great players. He came to Miami, and, yeah, they needed to be refined, but they were great players. There were so many of them that you could go ahead and establish your culture and hold them accountable. And he did. He did that here. So I don't mind him doing that. But your coordinators have to be great. And, they, you know, like you mentioned, neither one has ever been a coordinator at this type of level, impactful level. I mean, this is the highest level there is. I don't think either one of them has been in this chair yet. But they're growing. They're improving. They're making their mistakes. But you've got to go ahead and tip your cap off to someone that's figured out, hey, I can't run my traditional defense right now. We've got to make an adjustment that fits where we're at currently, but also what matches up well against Clemson. Now, granted, there was no prior film where we're using a 3-3, you know, 3-3-5 stack. I get it. Now there's film out there. So the people, you know, the GM's going to come in here, make whatever adjustment they have to make, and, you know, you've got to win that game. So I think the other issue that we're listening to is now we start buying into this crap of, you know, we can still make the championship game in the ACC. Things that don't need to be discussed right now. What you got to worry about is Virginia right now. You got to find a way to stop Virginia on offense, and you got to go ahead and find a way to run the ball on defense, against their defense. So that's what you got to focus on. All this other minutia is irrelevant. You got to worry about UVA. And I think if we understand that mindset more, I think we'll have a little bit more success because, you know, all the accolades Ruben Baines is getting right now, it's great, but it's enough already. The next game, you know, and I think we have to do a better job of that as a fan base, is understanding the importance and how critical it is every Saturday when you get a chance to play.
Yeah. All right, everything. You got anything else tonight?
No, I think the last thing I wanted to point out, if you look at where our defense is as a whole, and you look at where our offense is as a whole, how much better can we be offensively, and who are those guys? Who specifically on offense and defense needs to step up? Someone on defense that's been mentioned tonight is, you know, Jaden Davis. Okay, I get it. The Brown brother's not playing yet. I get it. But you can't be a kid that gets a chance to play on a series and then you're not even in the right position based on how the wide receiver lines up and you're a veteran, you're a fourth-year or fifth-year player in college football and you line your feet wrong. And you pretty much you're giving the sideline away from the very beginning, which you weren't supposed to do. And then he doesn't play again. And then, you know, dad wants to wonder or mom wants to wonder or brother or cousin, hey, why do you only get one snap? Well, something's going on. You've got a kid from Vanderbilt that's not playing. Mom wants to wonder, dad wants to wonder, brother wants to wonder, why isn't he playing more? There are things that they're not doing yet. And if you think about who our best corner is right now, who struggled last year, I mean, pretty much couldn't play, didn't do much, you know, and Daryl Porter. And then this year, he's our best corner. Now, is it based on what side he's on? Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But I do know this. It's evident that you've got to have a certain skill set to play corner for this guy. And I don't know if those guys really truly have what he's looking for. Now, I don't know if it's mental. I don't know if it's confidence. I don't know what it is. But there's something that's not registering. I don't worry about the freshman kids like Stafford and even the younger Brown. Those kids not playing because they're still freshmen. And they're not – I think the playing corner is a little bit harder than it is to play at some other positions coming right in. It's almost like playing quarterback, I think you could say. But it's just it's harder. But when you've got veteran guys that have played already, have established tape, and they don't play, they're not a fit somehow. And I think that's the biggest issue we have. But who needs to step up on the offensive end? As a, you know, what players do, Gary? And what players need to step up on the defense? I don't know if you guys want to elaborate further on that.
All right, everything. Thanks for being part of the show. We'll attack that here in a second. So thanks for being part of the show.
Thanks, Gary.
You know, I could probably come up with a lot of guys on defense. I mean, I think Leonard Taylor's got a play a little bit more consistently, and you know he's got the capability of being such an impactful guy. But to me, those the three big corners, they need somebody to step up there. To me, because Jaden Davis, as good as he is against the run, when they get to Florida State, he's not going to hold up, I don't think. So I would say the big corners, and you know, offensively. Offensively, I would say Arroyo, you know, but it's up to, you know, they got to be willing to throw it to him too.
Yeah, those are the two only kind of position groups or positions that I would have to thought of, you know, when everything just asked that question, you know, what cornerback can step up really? Like you mentioned, obviously, Jaden Davis is very good in supporting the run and, you know, playing, you know, up close to the line of scrimmage. But once you drop back in the secondary, that's when you kind of get a little, you know, nervous and concerned with him. And then, you know, we've talked about it all year, the tight ends. I think now they're up to, what, 6 catches or 7 catches on the season, which is kind of insane to think as a group. But, you know, hopefully with Arroyo coming back, kind of getting more healthy, kind of get more acclimated to the system, that'll change a little bit more. But I would say those two kind of position groups or positions are the two, you know, I want to see step up on both sides of the ball because, you know, throughout the team, I mean, most of the team is good in every position group, but I would say those two definitely are the ones I would say I want to, you know, step up a little bit more.
All right, let's go out to the 757. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Boy, you thought I was done. Oh, no, Kim ain't never done. I had to call back.
Oh, it's
me real bad. Nobody talk about them sorry-ass refs. 2 weeks in a row, well, almost 2 weeks in a row,
What's this? You got two numbers?
Hey, baby, I'm home now. I'm home, baby. I do it all, man. I'm a Cane for life. You keep thinking I'm faking throwing it, but I don't eat baloney. I'm real deal Holyfield, baby. Was that a safety? Can I get that? Was that a safety? Why didn't you call it a safety, Gary? What was the problem?
It absolutely was a safety. I have no explanation for why they didn't call it a safety.
Okay, then. Was that a TD that your boy caught over Williams? It really didn't look like he had control. It looked like his foot touched when his knee touched.
I thought
it
was
didn't
a
look
TD.
Like no TD to me.
I thought it was. I thought it was a TD.
You thought it was a TD. Okay, all right. Then with all that being said, man, yeah, I got numbers all for you, boy. I know Azubi like, damn, Kane got to be. Yeah, I'm everywhere. I'm everywhere. But that was the one thing I wanted to get across. Officiating is terrible. And my Miami Dolphins, they got ripped. In 70 years, no penalty. It happened 70 years ago. I wasn't even born that a team didn't get one penalty. You can't win like that. You just can't win. But other than that, we're going to be fine. Like I said, I'll be out there next week, and ain't no need to talk about the other stuff. Oh, one more thing. Why do you think Jakai need to be a wide receiver? I'm just going to ask. Because you're really persistent on this. Can you help
me? Because he's not a coy. He's not an accurate passer.
Okay, let me ask you this. I do remember people talking about Lamar Jackson years ago. Oh, he's not a good quarterback. He'll be a receiver.
Lamar Jackson was an accurate passer.
He was an accurate passer. You sure?
Yes.
Because that ain't what most people were saying. They were saying he needed to be a wide receiver. But okay, Gary, I don't think the man needed to be a wide receiver.
No. I'm not saying that's not why. I'm not saying it for the stereotypical reasons that you might be. Trust me.
But he ain't got a chance of hell to play Miami quarterback. Just say it.
Yeah, I'm not saying it because he's a black quarterback, okay?
I didn't say anything about black. You brought that up. It's still falling on your side, not my side. I said
Lamar Jackson, if you say that, then we can understand.
He's not athletic. He don't have the skills to throw a rock.
I'm trying to answer your question. Lamar Jackson, that is what they did, okay? They did stereotype Lamar Jackson. No question about it. Miami didn't even recruit him. He was coming out of high school. They were saying he's not going to be a college quarterback. But the minute he got to Louisville, he was an accurate passer. I mean, there was no question that he was going to be a quarterback. And he deserved
that coach from Miami. I'm just asking. I'm not being
back then,
hypocritical.
I think it was
right
that.
Who's a quarterback coach to help these kids get better at throwing?
Oh, well, right now it's Shannon Dawson. But listen, it's not the quarterback coach's fault, okay? I said this from the minute I watched him last year, okay? I said, and I got jumped on, I said, I do not believe that he will ever play quarterback at Miami. And the reason is that, and if you talk to quarterback coaches, they will back this up. Like, you could teach a quarterback what to do. In a system, and you can coach them up and teach them offense and what to do and the whole thing. You can't coach usually with quarterbacks accuracy. And at this level, you don't have time. Like they don't have time to. They're gonna keep recruiting guys.
Of course they're gonna keep recruiting. That's why if he don't play, they need to recruit. Cause like your boy, I do say your boy, TVD. He ain't that damn accurate. He's good at times. He locks in too much. He doesn't roam his eyes around. That don't make him a good quarterback, and that don't make him a bad quarterback either.
Correct.
But
they,
he does have his weaknesses.
They can coach that, and I'm surprised they haven't coached
that. They can coach that shit. It's been 2 years, Gary. He's still
coaching. Listen, I'm surprised. I'm surprised that he still has that issue.
That means he ain't learning and he ain't getting better. So I still say, you ride your boy. You ride or die with him. I'll ride or die with the young man, Jakai. And I hope he wouldn't go somewhere else and light it up. Then I'll be like, hey, Gary, look at that buddy over there. Or he could wind up on the bench and don't do nothing. So right now the verdict is still out on Jakai. Williams look good. TVD, he going to come back this week. He going to play his ass off because he don't want to be on the pine. But sometimes I wonder if he a real Miami fan. Remember last year when he talked that mess with the Miami fans, this, that, and the third. Then the rumors with Alabama, man, you can pack your bags and carry your ass. That's how I feel. Because your blood, my blood, and Zuki blood, and all these Kane fans that call, they true fans. And he's a player. But sometimes I just don't know if he's really got the love for Miami. Where we gone? Have a nice night.
Hey, no more phone numbers tonight, okay?
No, I'm gone, man. I got to get up 5 in the morning. Peace out.
All right, man. Azubi, I don't want to get all long-winded on this. It's getting late. But people, like, always think, you know, I was saying it from the beginning last year, and I said the same thing when I saw Tate Martell when he came to Miami. I said, Tate Martell's never going to play at Miami. I mean, and, you know, Shannon Dawson will be the first. Like, it is hard to coach a quarterback that has an accuracy issue throwing the ball coming into college.
Yeah, I know. The kind of struggles we saw with Jakari have been, you know, there since, you know, he first arrived on campus. And, you know, we saw him kind of make a little bit of progression, you know, during the spring last year. And then kind of the fall and the first fall scrimmage, when we saw him again, it was kind of a little bit disappointing to see him, you know, not take another step. But, you know, that's just a situation that I feel like right now Miami's handling it well, like you said, you know, not wasting his, you know, eligibility and kind of holding off things. And, yeah, like you mentioned earlier in the show, I just feel like that's something that they kind of really have to sit down next at the end of the season, really discuss with him whether, you know, he wants to stay at Miami and keep fighting for that quarterback spot or, you know, transfer elsewhere. But that's just definitely, you know, interesting situation that's going to have to be, you know, handled, you know, rather sooner than later.
And you very fairly just got beat out by a true freshman who's a year behind you. And they're not going to stop recruiting. So I personally, like I said, if he were my son, I would say, listen, you got to be honest about this. Like, if you want to be a quarterback, you got to go in the portal and find yourself a system where they will, you know, utilize what, you know, make it, they really got to make it about you, you know, and it's got to be about the quarterback and what physical abilities he has, as opposed to everybody. And you can't do that at Miami right now with the program where it's at and where it's trying to get, you know, with Restrepo and Colby Young and Jacoby George. And, you know, you're trying to recruit an elite guy like Jeremiah Smith. And, like, you know, you can't, you don't have time to do that here. He could probably find a program that would be willing to do that, that doesn't recruit from the same type of pool, and build an offense around his skills. And if he could find that, that's a better place for him right now. All right, let's go out to the 786. You're live on Canesport Live.
Hey, Gary, how are you?
Doing great. Who's this?
This is Tony Dorsett, Dex Mill.
Hey, what's up, Tony? Is that really your name?
Hey,
come on.
No,
that's
not.
You're moonlighting as like one of those strippers that has a stage name. That's what you're doing. That's not really.
That's not really
your name.
No, it's not. But first of all, Gary, let me address who was that? Kane Kane that just called. I was a big fan of Kane Kane until I just heard that phone call. Gary, you're 1,000% correct about Ja'Quarri Brown. And hey, to all my brother Kane fans out there, from one brother to another, man, y'all quit this shit with the Ja'Quarri Brown shit. When Gary calls a spade, the boy can't throw the ball. He cannot throw the ball. Now, that doesn't mean that he won't be able to throw it in the future, but it's highly unlikely. But anything can happen, but it's highly unlikely, right? But the man can't throw the ball. I don't know why y'all getting y'all feelings all wrapped up in the goddamn knot when Gary say the man can't quarterback. He can't quarterback. What the hell is Jeremiah Smith, like Gary just said, going to come to Miami for if we got somebody like Ja'Quarri Brown as quarterback? That's not Miami, man. We need a quarterback that can distribute the ball from the pocket. If he also happens to be an athlete and can run, okay, the more the merrier. Great. But right now that boy can't throw the ball. Come on, Kane Kane, man. Come on, you think you're going to ride with him? That boy can't throw. He can't throw. Anyway, moving on, Gary. I had to tell you, Gary, you're 1,000% correct on that one. All right. So now let's put that shit to bed, man. Y'all dudes need to quit that shit, man. Like, just because he's a black quarterback and Gary say he can't throw, y'all get all in your feelings. The man can't throw. Gary love the Canes like we love the Canes. Now, I'll tell you something that Gary is wrong about. Now, Gary was wrong about when Reuben Bang, and I talked to you about this, Gary, when Bang was coming to Miami. And you were looking at Bain. Gary, you had no idea that Bain was going to be like this. And me and several other people told you Bain was it, but you didn't think he was elite. I'm sure you think he's elite right now.
100%. I mean, as a true freshman? No. I mean, we've never even seen it. Warren Sapp wasn't doing this as a true freshman.
Exactly. But I remember talking to you, Gary. We were trying to tell you, but you were pretty hung up on his size because you kept saying that you didn't think he had the height and the length to do it at that defensive end position. But just think about this, Gary. If he's doing it at defensive end, right, against tackles and against chips from tight ends and running backs, right? What do you think he would do if he was inside? Wait until he gets inside and all he got to beat is a guard.
You know, I agree. I totally agree. I don't know. He's playing so well on the outside. I don't know whether that'll happen now or not. I agree with you. I was not right about it. I couldn't imagine he'd be this good as a true freshman.
So now what I think's going to happen is I think it's going to be kind of like depending on their personnel. So for instance, if this Joshua Horton kid can pan out, and he's that, and let's say Leonard Taylor comes back next year for some reason, then you can leave Bain on the outside. But other than that, if they're not strong inside, and they've been recruiting the way they're recruiting on the edges, they'll probably kick them down inside. All right, another point I want to make to you, Gary. I want your feedback on this right here. I heard you say something earlier about the coaches not pulling their weight, Gary. It is plain as day to see. And I'm really interested to see what Mario's going to do because I've got friends down there, at the university, and they told me one time that Mario had a meeting, and it was a recruiting meeting. And Mario was so mad, he told everybody, what the hell did I bring? He didn't, I'm not calling out any names who he said, but this is what he said to everybody. What the hell are you here for if you can't close the deal on certain recruits? And it had something to do with the Kamani McLean thing last year. Well, now let me say this to you this year. It's plain to see that that defensive line coach is dead weight. The tackle coach, the big Samoan guy. He is dead weight. The only defensive line recruit we got, and thank God we got him, is Jason Taylor. You know it. I know it. And let me tell you, Gary, a lot of us sharp Miami Hurricane fans, we see it, right? If Mario don't make – we know how Mario is about recruiting. You know and I know. If Mario don't get rid of this dude and move him somewhere else, it's going to be a bad look on Mario. If you're gonna be the way you're gonna be it all the time, Mario, and I'm with you. 100%. That D line coach, that I can't think of his name, the tackle coach, that's why
Talavea. Coach Talavea. A lot's gonna depend on whether they pass the new rule that you can have unlimited number of coaches. If he can have unlimited number of coaches, then maybe he keeps Talavea. But I agree with you. He has shown up to be he's a recruiting liability right now. There's no doubt. And, you know, Jason Taylor's really in his first year as a college coach. I mean, I don't know that he has this recruiting thing down. And, you know, let's be honest. I mean, it's the guy that's a Hall of Famer that's got a family. Like I'm not sure that he is going to be long for this college football recruiting thing. When you have to sit there and grind and kiss kids' butts 12 months a year, and you can't let up for 1 second, because if you let up, they're going somewhere else. I mean,
as of right now, as far as that goes, Gary, you're speculating. So let's just go with what we've seen. What we've seen so far is Jason Taylor killed it on the recruiting trail. He flipped the kid from Michigan, all Jason Taylor. What was his name? Rudolph, I think his name was.
Rudolph,
the edge king. He flipped him from Michigan. He single-handedly closed the deal with the kid up in Chicago. All these other kids that we're even getting in the living room with when the kid in mainland Daytona Beach was even the only reason he entertained us is because of Jason Taylor. And I'll tell you something that Mario did that was smart though, right? Mario seen that Salavea was a defensive liability. So what he did was he took the title of defensive tackle coach and defensive end coach off of Jason Taylor, and the defensive tackle title off of Salavea. He just called them defensive line coaches because he wanted, for every defensive lineman that we were recruiting, he wanted Jason Taylor to be able to go into their living room because Salavea can't close it. He's a big, big liability as a recruiter. Let me move on to my last point, Gary. The injuries, right? I wanted to ask you, how long is Mezzador going to be out, and how long is the running back from American Heritage, is he out for the year also?
You know, I thought both of them would be back by now, so I don't know what to say. I mean, Mezzador still is limping a little bit. I don't know that we'll see him this week. And then you got to wonder, like, after being out for so long, how effective is he going to be? Well, you know, we'll see. Fletcher is another one that I thought was getting pretty close, but he didn't see. You know, there's no scuttlebutt about him coming back this week. So I don't know, man. I don't have an answer on either one of those guys.
Yeah, but okay, all right, Gary. Man, but yeah, Kane, if you're still listening, come on, man. Come on with that bullshit, dog. Come on, dog. Like, that boy can't throw the ball. Don't be getting on Gary when Gary calling a spade. That boy can't throw. Hopefully he can throw, all right? You know, hey, hopefully he can throw. I seen Jalen Hurts make a – I'll tell you this, though, Gary. I never in a million years thought Jalen Hurts would play the way that he's playing now at Philadelphia. I never seen that coming. When Jalen Hurts was at Alabama, Tua came in that national championship game and relieved him, I said, oh, his job is over. Alabama has too many weapons. They don't need a running quarterback. They need a distributor of the football. When you got talent, like Miami's going to have talent, receivers, tight ends, running backs, You need somebody who can distribute the football effectively. Ja'Cory Brown types are no good at Miami, period. Can you know that? I'm out, man.
All right, man. Thanks for your call. Give us a call next week. Let's go. Let's go to the 404. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
What's up, Gary? It's Uki.
Hey, what's up, Uki? How you doing, man?
Not much. And to that last caller, neither are the two other quarterbacks that we have here. They are not expectedly as well. Miami need to move on and find a better quarterback. It's not just Ja'Cory. We got two other quarterbacks that are a liability as well. And, Gary, you were also wrong about Bashard Smith. You said he's nowhere on the level of a Santana Moss. But let's remind you, the same stuff that you're criticizing Bashard Smith for were the same things that people were criticizing Santana Moss for. What do you think that whole rant when he went on the big time plays was from all the criticism he was getting from the media, all the criticism he was getting from the fans for drop passes, not coming through in big games. So when you sit up here and say somebody can't, okay, he's having issues. He hasn't been all the way there. Neither was Santana Moss. You know what I'm saying? That's what everybody can make a turn. But the talent is clearly there. He does need to get more touches. How does somebody get better? By giving more touches. Nobody's perfect. You make these comments about players constantly.
Come on, man. Uki, who are you taking touches away from, Uki? Who are you going to take them away from?
What do you mean?
And I think he will get some more touches, but you got to scheme them up for him. I mean, who are you taking them away from?
But hold on, Gary. You don't think he's proven the last few games that he needs to get more touches? You don't think he's proving it? You want to? Okay, he almost phoned the ball in the end zone. We don't see plenty of players do that. Plenty of high veteran players make that mistake. But you don't think he deserves to get more touches? Come on, Gary, stop it.
I think he'll get more touches, but who are you taking touches away from? The tight ends are not involved in the offense. They need more touches, Uki.
Santana Moss had the same issues that Bashard Smith had when he was here. So let's not act like he did.
Did Jay Allen earn more touches the other night? I thought so. I mean, who are you taking touches away from? Colby Young? Well, you only got so many plays.
Hold on.
Are you sitting down the other running backs?
Gary, how many drops does Colby Young have in the game? Plenty.
But what I'm saying is, who are you sitting down to give Bashard Smith more touches? Who are you going to sit down?
As big as he is, Gary, come on, Gary. Come on.
Uki, who are you going to sit down? Henry Parrish? Are you going to sit down Henry Parrish? You going to take his 15 touches a game away? When Mark Fletcher comes back, you going to sit Mark Fletcher?
Is he a clear tailback, Gary? No. He can play in the spot. You can put this dude on the field.
Rashard Smith is the number five tailback on this team if everybody's healthy. Okay, he had a great run the other night. That was an amazingly big hole. He did a great job getting through it, and he was able to use his speed. He was able to use his speed and run through the secondary. No argument. How many times a game do you think that's going to happen?
But, Gary, here's the reason why Miami doesn't get the game breakers that we want to, because we can't figure out how to get kids like Bashard Smith the ball. We can't figure it out. We have coaches that can't figure it out. But I guarantee you,
if you put him at running back, he's the fifth best tailback on this team.
Okay, we'll put him in the slot, Gary.
Okay, if you put him in the slot, fair enough. Okay, now you got to take your leading receiver off the field or put him outside where he's kind of out of position. Okay? If you put him outside, now you're taking Ja'Cory George.
I guarantee you put him in any offensive-minded coach or country.
Well, they're going to do it. They're going to keep doing it, and he's going to get his 3, 4, 5 touches. He'll get his 3, 4, 5 touches, Uki.
This is the reason why kids like Jeremiah Smith continue to leave.
Time out, because I want you to hear another opinion on this. Give me a minute. I'm going to let Azubi weigh in on this, and then we'll come back to you. Just give us a minute here. Azubi, who are you going to take touches away from to give Bashard Smith more than his 3, 4, 5 touches a game when everybody's healthy?
No, that's a hard answer to come up with, because like you mentioned, if you move, the only place you could kind of put him where he would thrive the most is in the slot, but we've seen how productive Xavier Restrepo has been. And then in the backfield, when everybody's healthy, it's hard. So that's a really hard kind of situation being as a coordinator. Obviously, you know, you give him his shots at special teams. I'd say maybe put him back as a punt returner instead of having Xavier or Ray Ray there to give him a few more touches that two or three times and back there punting. But that's just a very, very hard situation to be in. Obviously, he's making the most out of, you know, the running backs going down and the extra touches is wide out, but that's just a really hard situation to be in because all your wide receivers have been extremely productive. The running backs have been good when they're healthy, so it's just it's hard, but that's a million-dollar question right now.
And that was a big hole the other day, okay? Like, he did a great job. He burst through it, and he ran until he didn't keep the ball in his hands. But and I'm not knocking Breshard Smith. I'm just saying he's the number five running back right now. Henry Parrish is a better running back. Jay Allen's a better running back. Chaney is a better running back. And Mark Fletcher's a better running back. Because as a running back, you got to be able to pound it out the way they did the other day. You're not going to have that gaping hole every single time you hand the ball off to your running back. Like, if that happens once a game, you're doing great. Like, you know, that was they caught him in the right formation. They had the right play call. It was executed impeccably. The guys on the right side of the line did a great job. You know, Marigola and Ennis Cooper, they did a great job blocking. He did a great job getting through the hole and getting up the field. But that's not just what being a running back is about. Like, you got to be able to pick up 4, 5, 6 yards and handle the physical pounding. That is not Breshard Smith's game. So he is a specialist. He's a guy that you'll put in the slot. You'll hand the ball off to him on end arounds and stuff once or twice the game, which is what they've been doing. You'll throw a bubble screen to him. You'll throw a screen pass to him from time to time. But you're not building your offense around him. He is probably the number five running back on this team right now. All right, Uki, I'm coming back to you. Go ahead.
Gary, nobody is saying that you have to build a team around him, but you got plenty of teams that have so-called specialists on their team, and they find more than more ways to get guys like him because he's a matchup nightmare for teams. But if you're not being creative mind, that's the thing. We usually get these coordinators, they're not necessarily creative in offense. You know, you got guys, geniuses like a Lincoln Riley that will have a field day with a guy like Breshard Smith. Look what he's doing with Zachary Branch. The thing here with Miami, and that's the thing I keep telling you, if people know that Breshard Smith is that guy in Dade, and that's why kids like that continue to leave, because we can't get the playmakers on the field.
Okay, listen, man. Let's take the other night, okay? The other night he had a couple kick returns, okay? He got four rushing attempts, had four carries out of the backfield, busted one of them. He had five receptions. So he had like 11 touches in that game. I mean, that's pretty good for a specialist, right?
That's not bad, but I'm telling you, we need to be more consistent with
him. Well, I mean,
more...
11 touches is pretty good.
But Gary, don't bash the kid and this because
I'm not bashing him. I'm understanding what he is. He's a specialist. He's a good college football player. He's a specialist. He's been ridiculously inconsistent through the first 3 years of his time at Miami. You don't know that you can count on him. Even when he has great plays, he screwed it up the other night. Quite honestly, that is a screw up. He got lucky because Jacoby was hustling and recovered that ball. That was a screw up. But I don't care if you think I'm being too harsh. That was a screw up to fumble that ball. And like I said, last year there were issues. He drops the big pass against Texas A&M in midseason. They had to bring his mom in and sit down and have a heart to heart. It worked. He's turned it around since then. He was much better the second half of last year. And I think he's been pretty good in his role this year. But that's what he is. He's a specialist and a role player. And I think they are being creative and finding ways to use him. But let me ask you this. Ray Ray Joseph right now, who's a very similar type of player to Breshard Smith, has one role on this team this year, and that's returning punts. So are we now supposed to take that one role away from Ray-Ray Joseph to give it to Burchard and then just put Ray-Ray Joseph off to the side and say you have no role at all this year? You know, I don't know. I don't know if that's the answer either.
Who's being more productive on the field, Ray-Ray Joseph or Burchard Smith?
Burchard Smith getting way more opportunities. Ray-Ray had one touch last week. Burchard had 11. I think they're similar type players. Azubi, am I right?
Yeah, no, I feel like that was a very similar comparison.
So they're similar, Uki. So, you know, I don't know, man. Like I think it is what, you know, I mean, he's getting plenty of opportunities. But let's call a spade a spade. Like, he screwed up the other day. They had impeccable blocking. They opened up a massive hole for him. It was a parting of the Red Sea. He's running down the football field. He got run down, and he got the ball knocked away from him. That is a fail. Okay, that is a fail.
How many veteran NFL players we see make that same stupid play?
It doesn't matter. Okay. Fail. I don't care what level. You could go out to the Miami Gardens Ravens and see, and if you see somebody do that, he's failing.
All these kids make some boneheaded plays. Like I said, Kobe Young, Kobe, he done dropped several key touchdown passes. So let's not act like
I agree.
Kobe Young. As big as he is, he drops too many passes.
I agree. And Uki, they went right back. They didn't sit him down after he made that mistake. They didn't sit down Kobe Young either. They're not like putting these kids. Oh, you make a mistake, and you're, you know, go sit on the bench the rest of the game.
You're not bashing Kobe Young like you going at Burchard Smith.
I'm not bashing Burchard Smith either. I'm just saying he's the number five running back on the team. He's the number two.
I get it.
All right, Uke. Hey, man, thanks for being part of the show. I mean, I'm not trying to offend anybody. It's Azubi. Was I wrong? He's the number five running back. He's the number two slot receiver.
Yeah, no, I feel like if you do ask the question, you know, what reps he's going to take from somebody, it's hard to take away, you know, reps from certain guys and certain plays. I feel like if you get Burchard, you know, 8 to 10 touches a game, I feel like that's you know, enough for him. Because giving somebody 8 to 10 touches when you're not a starter, it's hard for anybody, no matter who it is. So I feel like the role he has right now, if he keeps doing what he's doing, he's going to earn the more touches. I fully expect him next game to get at least 10 touches, or then that's when I'd be like, okay, then now you have to get him more involved after he shows what he can do. But I feel like right now Miami's kind of doing the best they can with him, and you know, he's making the most of them, so I feel like he's going to keep getting them, but that's just a very hard and sticky situation to take touches from certain people. And I didn't, when I said put him back at punt return, I completely forgot about the Ray-Ray. That's taking his only role, and you know, that's putting another guy that next year, you know, is going to be in that same situation. You got to get creative with getting him the ball, so for Shannon Dawson to figure out, but you know, that's why he gets paid the big bucks for that.
Well, he had two against Georgia Tech and five opportunities against North Carolina. And that's what it's going to be when everyone's back. I mean, you're not taking Mark Fletcher off the field to run Burchard Smith. I'm sorry. Like, that one play was a fluke, and if Mark Fletcher was in the game, he would have busted it too. So, you know, it is what it is. And certainly when you get those opportunities and you have success, you can't fumble the ball like that. I'm sorry. You just can't. And I'm not going to sit here and apologize for it. You know, that's how you lose games that you should win. All right, final call of the night. Let's go to the 786. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Hey, Gary.
Yes, sir.
Gary, yeah, this Tony Dorsett. I called back. I want you to call this Uki guy back and put us on that three-way call real quick because I need to
I can't do that.
Okay, well, let me just say this to Uki. Bro, why when I call out a spade about how you bring up, oh, the other quarterbacks do it too? Like, it's kind of like you a tattletale. Like, if Gary says, well, Burchard Smith been dropping balls, here's what Uki says. Well, hey, the other guy's been dropping balls too. Like, bro, what kind of kitty shit is that? Dog, it's a fact. Ja'Cory Brown is not a good quarterback. You say Tyler Van Dyke ain't a good quarterback. I'm going to tell you how good Tyler Van Dyke is. I don't particularly like Tyler Van Dyke for the record. He's okay. He's my quarterback. He's the best quarterback by far that we have if we want to win football games. But let me tell you how good Tyler Van Dyke is, Uki. Nick Saban tried to buy him from us. I guess Nick Saban don't know what he's doing, though, right? Like, bro, you going to compare Ja'Kerby Brown to Tyler Van Dyke? Talking about the other quarterbacks do it, too. Man, the other quarterbacks throw a lot of touchdowns. Ja'Kerby Brown can't throw no damn touchdown. Man, these dudes need to stop that victim petty shit, man. I'm out, Gary.
All right, man. thanks for calling again. I think I hit the wrong button, actually. I think we got one more 786 as the last call of the evening. You're live on Kane Sport Live. You with us? 786 going once, going twice. All right. We'll call it a wrap. All right. There were, Mazubi, there were a few, there were a few questions that were posted for us on the message boards that I wanted to get to here. Let me just pull them up real quick. I had them up here a minute ago, but I accidentally hit the button and lost them. I got them back now. All right, so let's blow through these real quick because I know everybody wants to go to sleep. Motley Kane wants to know when we're going to see Arroyo catching deep passes again. My God, I hope soon. I think he's pretty close to being healthy. He's been out there the last couple weeks. They've been putting him on the field. I have to think, don't you think, Azubi, at some point here, they're going to roll out Arroyo and Riley Williams?
Yeah, no, you kind of have to add another wrinkle to the offense because, you know, we saw, you know, teams are kind of starting to figure out, I wouldn't say figure out a little bit, but, you know, we saw Miami go to the screen one too many times for my liking. So I feel like you got to throw something with the tight ends or something else out there because you can't kind of be one-dimensional in a passing game where it's receiver, receiver, receiver. I want to see them hit the running backs a little bit more out of the backfield too, as well as incorporating tight ends. But, yeah, I think you're going to have to with Shannon Dawson. And, you know, what better time than having Elijah Arroyo come back and Riley Williams becoming more confident in himself, you know, midway through his true freshman year.
All right. He also wants to know if we see Jaleel Skinner and Cyrus Moss as transfer portal candidates. I don't think that Mario will run Cyrus Moss out of the program. He brought him here from the West Coast. They knew he was a project in terms of gaining weight. He is not there yet. I think he will get another year if he wants it to gain weight and have a chance to play. Jaleel Skinner, I do think, is going to be in the transfer portal. What do you think, Azubi?
Yeah, I have to agree with Skinner because he's kind of just completely fallen out of the depth chart. If he's not the fourth tight end right now, he's probably the fifth behind Jackson Carver. Yeah, that's kind of a guy that a lot of people had high expectations for, you know, kind of in the spring last year and the fall a little bit this year, and just nothing came out of it. You know, we saw a couple of glimpses of him last year getting some opportunities. He dropped some big passes. And, you know, with this type of offense that Mario's looking for, you need to be a tight end that, you know, knows how to block and is more than willing to block. And that hasn't been his thing. So I feel like that's almost certainly a guy that you see in the portal. And with Cyrus Moss, that's another one that's just kind of, you know, like you mentioned, a project that, you know, Mario and Jason Taylor even talked about him a lot before, too, this season. So that's kind of a toss-up to me. You know, I feel like that's going to be a decision on his part. But I feel like Skinner is definitely going to hit the portal when the time comes.
Yeah, I think he's going to hit the portal. He's just not willing to work hard enough at blocking to play here. Like, they're not looking for a flex tight end in Jaleel Skinner. I mean, you know, if you're looking for a flex tight end, you're going to use Arroyo in that role before you use Skinner. You're going to use Riley Williams in that role before Skinner. So I think he's been passed up, and I don't think he works hard enough to remain here long term, but maybe we'll be wrong. We'll see. Honey IV has a great question here. He says, can Mario for once keep these players from believing that they're the 2001 team? He even sees it in the NFL. Teams just totally tune out 1 week after a big win in a stunning lack of professionalism. Got to show up, Azubi, against UVA and NC State.
Yeah, I think Miami already had that kind of week where they didn't show up with Georgia Tech, and I would be very surprised if we see that twice this year where they don't show up against a team they could easily, you know, handle. Obviously, UAB's coming off of a game against North Carolina where I probably no one in the country picked them to win besides, you know, UVA fans. But I really cannot see this team going into another game like how they did against Georgia Tech. So I really do think, you know, that's kind of out of the picture. I feel like the rest of the season you're going to see the best version of Miami. You know, and we kind of saw, you know, what they're capable of, even being down their starting quarterback, even being down a couple guys versus Clemson. And I feel like that win really, really energized the locker room and kind of gave them the, hey, even when we're down, we can still, you know, beat, you know, one of the better teams in the conference and in the country talent-wise. So I don't see Miami having that another lapse and slipping up again like they did against Georgia Tech.
T-Dog wants to know, how awesome is it to have a defensive coordinator that not only can switch schemes but formations week to week? Pretty damn awesome, T-Dog. That's why you're asking the question. Big kudos, Azubi, to Lance Guidry for coming up with that 3-3 stack against Clemson and throwing a little wrinkle in there that they weren't ready for, and it obviously helped.
Yeah, no, I think it's awesome. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, always talk about, you know, the James Williams thing and, you know, how he was never being used properly and all this. You know, in this, you know, defense in Atlanta, usually you see him, you know, excelling, you know, when he's in the box playing linebacker. Obviously, he's not playing, you know, to All-American level or, you know, out of his mind where it's like, wow, this guy's, you know, a bona fide first-rounder. But you've seen him make a big leap in his game, and I feel like I'm not the only one that sees that just all around, whether it's, you know, him covering or him playing in the box, him being willing to play that linebacker spot and, you know, the next play go back and cover. So all credit to Lance Guidry or getting these guys to buy in and getting these guys to, you know, play with him, play for him and all that good stuff. So, I said it, you know, one time I'll say it 1,000 times, you know, Lance Guidry and Shannon Dawson are two home run hires by Mario, in my opinion.
Wolfgar wants to know if they'll use the 3-3 stack in every game or just against certain opponents. I think it'll depend on the opponent. I don't think they're locked into anything, but it was very effective against Clemson. So I would think we might see it again. Everything 305 wants to know about players going into the portal way too soon for that question. Let's circle back to that at the end of November. Jam Canes wants to know about Lance Guidry's comments in his Monday presser about the last play of the Clemson game where he suggested that they did not set the edge, and he said, thank God that the Clemson quarterback went off script. That is absolutely what he said. They were outnumbered on the edge. Had they gone with the running play and gotten to the edge, they probably would have scored. That is the thin line between winning and losing sometimes. And Miami had a break coming to them, so I wouldn't feel too bad about that. Jay Collette wants to know, how do we explain the offensive line getting handled by UNC and then dominating Clemson the next week? I thought they were heavy-legged at UNC. This was my opinion based on watching them up there. They didn't look like they had their legs under them. I don't know if Mario worked them too hard in the week leading up to that game or what it was. They didn't look right to me out there against UNC. They did look right, obviously, against Clemson. I thought they were much fresher and much more physical, and I think that's why we saw the results we did. We've already talked, MSK Fish, we've already talked about the cornerbacks a lot on this show, so I'm not going to go there. Batavia Kane wants to know if Jason Taylor's on the staff in 2024. I would say probably, but... like, I don't know if he'll be on the staff 10 years from now or, you know, what. I think the grind of recruiting in college football, I'm not sure. I could be wrong on this. You know, it's very early in the game. I'm not sure that's going to be his, you know, to his liking. But we'll see. Steekins Azubi wants to know how close we are to losing Artavius Jones to FSU. Your thoughts?
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit, you know, earlier in the show. I wouldn't say, you know, it's definitely, you know, he's flipping to Florida State, you know, hit the panic button right now, but it's definitely some level of concern. Like I said, he's visited Florida State more than he's visited Miami this year. I think either this week was his second time visiting in the last 3 weeks or he's going to visit again next week. So there's a lot of interest on his end in that case. I feel like, you know, like you mentioned with Armando Blood, if Miami's playing Clemson and Florida State's playing Duke, as a Miami commit, I feel like you should be in Miami for that game. So a lot of concern there, and definitely going to be a situation where Miami's monitoring. I feel like Miami kind of, you know, has to is playing, you know, keep away right now, kind of trying to fence off Florida State, and that's just definitely going to be a situation where I feel like something is going to happen in either the next week or so where we're, you know, going to figure out where Arcavius Jones is going to play college football next fall.
And Dahl Kane wants to know, and he's directing this to me, Azubi, have I ever been called astute by an offensive coordinator before the way that Shannon Dawson did in Monday's press conference? At one of my questions, I can't remember which one it was quite honestly. And can I put that behind me and keep grinding for this week's game? And Dahl Kane, that was a high moment. As you see, just listening to the show, you know, when you do what we do, you have good moments and bad ones. You take a lot of heat. Not everybody agrees. That's what sports is all about. I love every second of that. But, you know, you do like to be astute. We all have standards that we're trying to attain, just like a wide receiver and a running back. And Zuby will tell you he's trying to attain a standard every single day, as we all are. And I just try to keep it real, man. I try to call things the way I see them. I'm not trying to be harsh on any one guy. I think a quarterback has to be accurate. I think that a cornerback has to know what the down and distance is of a play and can't be making interceptions to build up his stats 20 yards down the field when he should just be batting the ball down so his team gets the ball deep in the other team's territory instead of at midfield. You can't have a guy running off the sideline onto the field in the same play, drawing a 15-yard penalty that sets you even further back. You can't have a running back busting an 80-yard run and getting the ball knocked away from him in the last 5 yards. What am I leaving out, Azubi? I'm sure I'm leaving something out, but like, it is what it is, man. Like, we tell it like it is at Kanesport on these shows. I know that everybody doesn't always like it, but it meant a lot. Yes. But to hear the offensive coordinator say that one of my questions was astute, it was great. But honestly, that's the standard that we try to live up to every day. Right, Azubi?
Yes, sir. Bringing the best to the Canes fan that we possibly can without pissing everybody off.
All right, guys, that's going to be it for the show for tonight. Thank everybody for calling in. I thought tonight's show was really, really good. Sorry we started a few minutes late because of some crazy technical snafu. I don't understand. We've used this system for probably 15 years now. We've only had a handful of shows where we had a technical issue. I do not know why it was not working, but I'm sorry for the inconvenience of having to change links and reset it up to start at 8:30, but I thought tonight's show was one of our best of the season. Great calls. And those of you that didn't get to listen to the entire thing, the podcast will be up on the website here in a few minutes. So thank you to Azubi for weathering through a late night. It's definitely past his bedtime. Thank you to all you guys for listening. And hopefully we will see you next Tuesday night. Good night, everybody.